Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is March 8th, 2014, and this is episode 47, Video Game Movies. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
You know, as you probably gathered from the title of our episode, this week we're going to be looking at movies based on video games.
Movie buoy.
Oh man, let's not get started with all that. However, before we get to that discussion, of course, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits. And even before that, unfortunately, we have two pieces of sad, sad news. Slackick, if you'd like to get us started with this first one.
Yeah, we got the sad news back in February that Ken Melville, who you might be most familiar with through games such as Sewer Shark and Night Trap and the Make My Video series, so very, very prominent in that Sega CD area, he passed away at the age of 65. And so our thoughts go out to his family and friends.
We are pouring a 40 out for you, and I am going to play Night Trap again in your honor.
Right. I mean, even though Night Trap is kind of LOL, I mean, it's a classic. Everyone's still talking about it. 20 years later, God, I feel old.
Right. We also have the sad, sad news that Brandon Boyer, the chairman of the Independent Game Festival, fought off cancer last year. So that part is awesome. You know, he's now cancer-free or, in remission and everything. Unfortunately, his medical insurance company denied paying his six-figure medical payments. So he's in a real tight spot financially right now. We don't normally call out to this sort of thing, but in this case, you know, this is really sad. This guy's done a lot for the indie game scene. And he has a GoFundMe page up taking donations for people to help him pay his medical bills. And if you have, you know, a spare five that you could throw this guy's way, it'd probably be really helpful. He's done a lot for indie games.
Yeah, that's tragic when that sort of thing happens to anybody.
Indeed. And, you know, with we certainly wish him well on his road to recovery. Hopefully he stays cancer-free. And I guess in the meantime, it's time for us to dig into some of these follow-ups.
All right. On the Rocksmith tip, we've got some Rise Against DLC. Not really my bag, but maybe yours. It'll be a five-song pack, but you can also buy them individually. These songs are Prayer of the Refugee, Give It All, Satellite, Make It Stop, parentheses, September Children, and Swing Life Away. I remember Swing Life Away. That was the acoustic like power ballad.
Yeah. That's actually, no, I hate to say this, but that's basically the only Rise Against song I like.
I kind of liked that song, yeah.
Anyway, the individual songs, as usual, are going to cost $2.99, and the five-song pack will be $11.99.
And also on the Rocksmith 2014 DLC tip, probably a more universal appeal will be coming in the form of Kiss DLC. And that includes Detroit Rock City, Heaven's on Fire, and I Was Made for Loving You. And as a three-pack, you can get it for $7.99.
Over on the Japan side of things, we have news that Rune Factory Team is going to be making a 3DS strategy RPG called Forbidden Magna.
I first saw that and thought it was Forbidden Manga.
Oh gosh, you know, the first
that
time
would be
I saw
an
it.
That would be a totally different type of game.
Right. Find the Ero Dojin.
Hide the panties from the schoolgirls.
Oh, girl. Anyway, you know, it's a new game from Marvelous AQL's Rune Factory team. Forbidden Magna, it's a strategy RPG for 3DS. We don't know a lot more other than that, but that's already enough to get me excited.
Yeah, you know, Marvelous and the Rune Factory peeps always do a good job. Square Enix has revealed the North American price for some of the Lightning Returns DLC. You can get the Lara Croft and Spear Hunter skin for $3.99. And at this point, since the free promotion for the Japanese voiceovers is long gone, you can get it for $3.99, which is still not unreasonable by any means.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's available now for your preferred last-gen system. So go check it out.
We have confirmation that this summer in North America, we will be getting the PS Vita port of Blaze Blue Chrono Phantasma. This is, of course, the most recent version of the Blaze Blue franchise, and for those of you who don't have a PS Vita, which I suspect is the vast majority of our audience, you can pick up the PS3 version here in North America starting on March 14th.
Yeah, I might just do that, even though I should get more stuff for my Vita.
Yeah, I'm gonna grab Chrono Phantasma for my PS3 as well, and I'll probably also get it for Vita. Something that's really interesting here is that while previous Blaze Blue releases have seen Xbox 360 ports, this Chrono Phantasma does not have a 360 port.
Hmm. One thing that stood out to me is that there is an additional side story revolving around a beach party. I can't help but wonder if there's volleyball involved.
We have news that Gundam Extreme vs. Full Boost, this of course is a game that, you know, we've talked about quite a bit here on the show over the last few months, is selling phenomenally well in Japan. In its first week, it moved nearly 300,000 units, according to Media Create, which was a sell-through of about 80% of its initial shipment. You know, this is slightly below the last iteration in the series, Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme Versus, but it's still, you know, for these kinds of games, still a really high number.
Yeah. We have news that Rust, which we talked about last time, has topped 1 million in sales. So the, you know, first-person survival sandbox is really striking a chord with people. And we kind of talked last time about how it evolved from being a zombie game into really just a survival game with really, like, interesting
social dynamics.
Social dynamics, thank you.
We also have news that the Tempest 2000 remake, TXK, is now available on PlayStation Vita. This actually launched somewhat early last month, but we haven't had an episode since then, and I really wanted to point it out because I'm a huge Tempest 2000 fan, and this game is phenomenal. So if you're into the whole, like, Tempest with super crazy psychedelic graphics, if you're into that, then I would definitely recommend you look into TXK.
Awesome. Something very near and dear to our hearts is that the GamerX 2 Kickstarter met its funding goal, so that's great to, you know, ensure that they'll be able to make the deposit on the hotel, and we will definitely be seeing you there if you are someone who plans to attend, hopefully at a panel of some sort, but regardless, we will be there. We will be queer and gaming.
And hopefully y'all will deal with it.
Yep, and that's July 11th through 13th in San Francisco at the beautiful Intercontinental Hotel. We are not being paid to say that. We just really passionately believe in having a safe space for all types of gamers, not just queer gamers.
It's also a really beautiful space.
Yeah, yeah.
Rise, Son of Rome, when it was announced last year, you know, the developers had talked about how it would be getting a cooperative gladiator mode challenge editor. Speaking to Polygon, however, last month, Microsoft confirmed that it was going to instead focus on expanding and improving the game experience through other free content updates and purchased add-on packs. And as a result, this cooperative gladiator mode challenge editor will not be coming out.
I hate to be one of those people, but I'm just waiting for that game to price drop to $20 or something.
You know, I'm actually renting it from Gamefly. It's pretty all right.
Is it? Because I know it was very lukewarm in terms of reception, both just in the general populace and in the gaming industry, or the gaming journalism.
Well, you know, let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. I've been renting it for like a week and a half, and this is the first time I've mentioned it to you. So it's not like setting my world on fire so much I'm going to talk about it over Bravely Default, but, you know, it's pretty all right. It's not bad. I mean, the problem is...
good enough for a rent.
Right? The Xbox One has so many compelling titles already that even though Rise on, you know, like the PlayStation 4 ecosystem right now would look really good, on Xbox One instead it's like, oh, there's like four other games I could be playing right now.
Yeah. I guess that's the downside of a console actually having games for it.
Right?
Don't get me wrong, I love both my current-gen consoles.
Obviously, everyone out there in Internet Radio Land probably remembers Broken Age, the Double Fine adventure game that was too big for its $3.3 million Kickstarter campaign. You know, last month they released the first half of the game so that they could raise money to finish the second half. Tim Schafer from Double Fine has now gone on record saying that the split release was a success. The second half is now funded, and they're working on finishing it up.
Well, that's good news. I've heard that the people who have played it, that I've heard their thoughts, they really like it.
We also have good news in that La Mulana 2's Kickstarter was successful. It reached its $200,000 Kickstarter goal, and, you know, it looks like they're going to work on the game and make it.
Excellent. We got some Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes information. Most notably, that the retail release is dropping to a price point of $30 to give as many people as possible an opportunity to play the game.
Now, you know, this is interesting because I think a lot of people were really excited to play Ground Zeroes, but had sort of lost interest when they saw the pricing scheme. You may recall this is the one where there's sort of like this tiered pricing scheme where like the digital versions are $10 less and the next gen versions are $10 more, and it was all just a big mess. But this whole them lowering the price for the next gen version retail versions from $40 down to $30, I think is going to ensure that they get a lot more sales.
Yeah, and I don't know if this had been confirmed already, but there will be some level of carryover into the Phantom Pain, which is good. I mean, you know, so you don't feel like you're just like, I mean, but I don't know. So I feel like some people feel like they need to have a reason to play the prologue or whatever, but eh. And there's also going to be an iDroid app for iOS and Android, which is a smart glass integrated sort of thing. You can play cassettes, view maps, so that's cute. I haven't really done much with smart glass, but that's cute.
It can be fun. We have news here that Killer Instinct, the Xbox One revival of the classic series that we have talked about quite a bit here on the show, is getting a soundtrack release. This, of course, is sort of par for the course for the Killer Instinct franchise. Many of you out there who have been gaming since the SNES era may recall the soundtrack Killer Cuts that came with the SNES port of Killer Instinct back in the day. The composer for the current version of Killer Instinct, Mick Gordon, broke the news during a recent Killer Instinct stream, indicating that the new Killer Cuts would be coming out around the end of March. Microsoft has contacted Joystick, whom ran this story, with an official comment that they don't currently have anything to announce for the soundtrack to Killer Instinct. However, you know, that's sort of par for the course anytime these things get announced unofficially on YouTube streams or what have you. So I think safe money is on the bet that this is on its way and we'll be seeing it soon.
Yeah. South Park, The Stick of Truth, which is now available, over in the Europe, Middle East, and Africa region of the world, has seen some censorship in the form of a couple scenes, seven scenes that are each about 20 seconds long have been removed. The content of the scenes included anal probing and abortion, so
par for the course for South Park.
Right, but, you know, so interestingly, that went through in our version of the game, but over in Europe and such, no go.
We're hearing a lot about games censorship lately. That might be a thing to talk about.
I know.
In obvious but still comforting news, Atlus has confirmed that all four of the Persona games announced a couple months back will be coming to North America. I'm talking, of course, about Persona Q for 3DS, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, Persona 4 Dancing All Night for PS Vita, and Persona 5 for PlayStation 3.
Excellent. I'm particularly excited that we get Persona Q this fall because it will whet my appetite for Persona 5.
Yeah, I'm actually really surprised and delighted to hear that we are going to be getting Persona 4 Dancing All Night.
Me too.
That was sort of the only one that I was a little unsure we'd be getting simply because of how off the wall the concept is.
Loot 2.0 is now available in Diablo 3 via a huge patch that had been received. And we talked about this a little bit, and one of the biggest changes is that there's a smart drop system, which means you're more likely to get a item that's specifically tailored to the class you're playing. The difficulty system has also been adjusted and all of that. And also a reminder that if you're into Auction House metagaming, that's going to be closing on March 18th, so not too soon after you hear this, so buy Auction House, but honestly, I think it's for the better.
We've talked previously about Trials Fusion. We now have a release date for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, and Windows PC iteration of this next entry in the series. Trials Fusion will be launching on April 16th in North America.
Yeah.
The downloadable version is priced at $20, while the physical version is going to be priced at $40 and include a season pass for 6 future DLC packs of content.
I noticed this being a trend lately.
It absolutely is. We also have news here that Infinite Crisis, the DC Universe MOBA, will be launching its open beta starting March 14th.
Zynga's lawsuit that they had, not their lawsuit, but a lawsuit that was filed against them from shareholders. You might remember the drama about their allegedly misleading shareholders about their finances. It was dismissed by a U.S. judge, and with the note that it failed to offer relevant basic factual details. So, those of you who are rooting for Zynga to crash and burn, it's not going to happen quite yet.
You may recall we talked here on the show quite some time back about how about a year ago now, when Nordic Games bought the Darksiders IP from the remains of THQ, that Darksiders 2 was taken down from the eShop in various territories around the world. It would appear about a week ago that Darksiders 2 began popping back up in various territories of the European Wii U eShop. So hopefully this is an indication that we're going to start seeing Nordic Games really starting to push the Darksiders IP again, and hopefully get these games back into circulation.
Yeah. The Dragonfall expansion for Shadowrun Returns is now available, and I believe that was the kind of drama back in the day where it was only going to be released on Steam, so which required you to activate a copy on Steam or whatever, with a Kickstarter, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
It'll be available for $15, or it is available, rather, for $15, and it takes place in Cyberpunk Berlin, focusing on the Dragonfall, which is a prophecy that heralds apocalyptic destruction.
You know, we talked about how Hulu was getting episodes of the Pokemon animated series for streaming. We also now have an announcement, and this has come to pass, it is presently available, that Netflix has a different set of Pokemon TV series and movies on its service now. This started on the first week of March, so you definitely, by now, can go load up Netflix and watch some Pokemans.
Yeah, I know. I have a couple favorite episodes from the Indigo League that I think we need to watch.
The upcoming DLC for The Last of Us, this is, of course, the last piece of DLC in the Season Pass, will contain a new difficulty mode for the game's single-player mode.
Maybe that will win some awards, too.
Oh, yeah, right. I bet we're going to see a ton of awards at the end of the year for the Last of Us. The game of the year is Last of Us's new lollipop difficulty.
Ah! you might remember we talked about Nosgoth, which was going to be the online multiplayer game set in the Legacy of King universe. That has officially entered closed beta, and it's focusing on the game's siege mode, which has you capturing specific locations as humans and keeping them safe from vampires. And then the vampires are trying to hunt down human opponents to satisfy their bloodlust. Sexy.
You know, there's been a lot of DLC for Typing of the Dead Overkill. We haven't really talked about all of it because, you know, I don't know if everyone needs to know that there's now a Shakespeare pack for Typing of the Dead Overkill. But I really wanted to point this one out because it really speaks to sort of the theme of our episode this week. How Typing of the Dead Overkill got DLC that is movie quotes. This pack is called the Silver Screen Lexicon Pack. And, you know, all of the phrases that will pop up are references to famous movies.
That's amazing. I need to go pick that up.
Ouya has announced their Ouya Everywhere initiative, which is going to put Ouya games on TVs, PCs, and other Android devices that are not, strictly speaking, the Ouya. Julie Ehrman, the CEO of Ouya, announced plans for this software initiative back on March 3rd. And basically the idea is that they want Ouya to be a gaming platform within the Android ecosphere.
That makes sense. Fez is going to be hitting PS3, PS4, and Vita on March 25th. So that's good news. You know, we've talked about Phil Fish, kind of his drama, but I'm using the word drama a lot today. But that's good news for those of you who have missed out on Fez because of not owning one of the systems that it has been on.
Ultra Street Fighter 4 has been confirmed to have an edition select feature. This is something that Capcom sometimes experiments with in its various games, most notably the Chaos Tower version of Darkstalkers, where basically you get to select what version of the series your character is going to play like. In this case, for example, if you picked Chun-Li in Ultra Street Fighter 4, you would get to pick whether you're playing Vanilla Street Fighter 4 Chun-Li, Super Street Fighter 4 Chun-Li, Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition Chun-Li, Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition version 2012 Chun-Li, or Ultra Street Fighter 4 Chun-Li.
Interesting.
And obviously, your opponent would also have to make all of these same choices, so expect to see a lot of vanilla Street Fighter 4 Sagat out there for a while.
Ha ha ha. Peggle 2 is making its way to 360 on
making
May 7th.
Making my way downtown.
Making my way to 360 on May 7th. No price point set, but it's $12 on the Xbox One.
You tried.
We'll also, those of us who are owning... Those of us who own Peggle 2 on the Xbox One, which is both of us, we are now able to play a dual mode, which is a local multiplayer competitive.
Fun!
What's the opposite of co-op?
Competitive.
Competitive, thank you.
Cheesy crazy.
The Project Spark beta launched a couple days ago, and if you are on the Windows 8.1 closed beta, you automatically have access to the XBone beta. And one of the cool things about the XBone beta is your ability to use Kinect to animate characters like through motion capture. So that's pretty neat. Like, I am looking forward to hearing more about Project Spark. It seems very ambitious, could easily go wrong, but I think it looks really cool so far.
Excellent. We also have the surprising and awesome announcement of Guacamelee Super Turbo Champion Edition. This release is going to be coming soon, and the most exciting part of this announcement is that it's going to be coming out for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and Wii U.
Wow.
You know, I've talked previously here on the show about this game on PlayStation 3 and PC. I am going to triple dip and grab it for the Wii U for sure. It is a great, great game, and it's going to have new content, including new areas, boss fights, and abilities not seen in the original release.
That's awesome. Raiden 4 Overkill is going to be coming to North America on April 29th. Once again, courtesy of UFO Interactive, who brought the 360 version over 5 years ago. Damn.
Yowza.
This PSN port is going to be an enhanced version, but we don't know if they're going to be including the bundled the DLC as a bundled thing.
Marie Rose, the new character in Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate that we have discussed here on the show previously, is finally seeing her release on the home versions of Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate. Marie Rose will be coming out on March 25th for Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, and her character pack will be $5.99.
Yeah, you know, that's funny because I had just been wondering when she would parachute onto DOA Island.
Dark Souls 2 is going to be coming out on PC on April 25th.
Ooh.
This is, of course, about a month after it comes out on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, but that's fine for me. I will simply wait until the PC version hits and, in the meantime, finish playing the games that I already have stacking up.
Unfortunately, Shantae and the Pirates Chorus has been waylaid at sea for a few more months. It's now targeted for an October 2014 release date. But, you know, in my eyes, I would rather have WayForward do it right, because we know what quality they're capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was initially supposed to be targeted for August 2014, so it's really only getting pushed back like 2 months. That's not that bad at all.
Yeah, and we don't have any news as to whether Half Genie Hero has also been delayed, but it's possible. But, you know, like we said, we'd rather have them do it right and really see a resurgence of Shantae kind of become a big thing.
Something that a lot of people out there in Internet Radio Land have been waiting for, we finally have a release date for Watch Dogs. The PC, Xbox One, PS4, Xbox 360, and PS3 open world title will be available on May 27th, 2014.
But not for Wii U.
You may have noticed I didn't include Wii U in that grouping of consoles because Guillermo announced back in February that the Wii U release will be seeing its own separate delay, pushing that version's release beyond the other platforms in order to focus the team's resources where they could have the broadest possible benefit for both our customers and Ubisoft.
And none for Gretchen Wii Uners.
Pretty much. Mario Kart 8 is getting a limited edition release in Europe, which includes a statue of a spiky blue shell.
So cute.
Yeah, you know, not a whole lot more about it to say other than that. Oh, something else that is actually rather very interesting is to point out that in Europe, the original Mario Kart for Super Nintendo is going to be getting a virtual console release on March 27th.
Woo-hoo!
And if you buy it before the June 30th release of Mario Kart 8, that's the Europe date, we are still set for May 30th.
Yes.
You will get a £5.49, whatever the cent equivalent of pound is.
Pence,
okay. Discount on the downloadable version of Mario Kart 8.
That's awesome. Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, in just a few weeks, on March 25th, will be receiving the Revelations DLC pack. That's going to be for 360 and PS3, of course. And it features Sexy Sexy Alucard being able to transform into a wolf, bats, and having the ability to turn back time. If he could turn back time... He could turn into a bat.
Really?
More on the Tomb Raider tip. It has officially passed the 6 million sold mark. So, you know, the game that was a failure sales-wise is now doing pretty well for itself.
Well, Daryl Gallagher, the Square Enix head of studios, said in a note to fans, surprisingly, that you know, they were very concerned about how, you know, the perception was that the game was a failure or what have you. But it has now exceeded profit expectations. So, the game actually ran the whole gamut from, you know, performs below expectations and lost money, etc., etc., to now overall, it has made more money than they expected it would, and obviously that's just going to go up and up as people continue downloading this great game.
Yeah, and last on the follow-up tips, if you buy an Xbox One, you can get a free digital copy of Forza 5. And that's just a limited time offer. Starting, it should be available this upcoming week. Starting, so I'm a little.
It is worth mentioning that this promotion does not apply to Xbox One consoles purchased as a part of the upcoming Titanfall bundle.
I'm a little frustrated that it doesn't include previous owners.
Well, then they'd just be giving the game away free to people who already bought their console.
Yeah, but I wouldn't complain about a free copy of Forza 5.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you have to feel for these guys. They're getting
ambassador program.
They're getting absolutely creamed by Sony's PlayStation 4, and they're the ones that are bringing software to the table, so it must be very frustrating for them.
Yeah.
And this whole thing really, to me, sort of reeks of desperation a little bit. But at the same time, they're in a position to be desperate. Certainly, I would like a free game, you know, just for having already been an early adopter, but I'm not surprised to hear that we're not getting anything like that.
Yeah. Also, to be fair, I took one of those BuzzFeed or Zimbio quizzes about which deadly sin are you, and I was greed.
I did know that about you. Anyway, moving on, let's get some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news.
So we've got news that Axis is going to be publishing XBLAZE Code.
I believe Embryo. That's Crossblade.
Crossblade? Crossblade Code. You never know with these X's. Crossblade Code Embryo, which is a PS3 Vita visual novel by Arc System Works.
And as you may have guessed by the name Crossblaze, this game takes place in the same universe as Blaze Blue, 150 years prior to the events of the first Blaze Blue game.
Interesting.
It follows Toya Kagari, a high school student who is attacked out of the blue and pulled into circumstances he doesn't understand. Crossblaze Code Embryo will feature multiple paths and endings, including a gag ending, when it releases here in North America this summer.
Interesting. The Invisibles series is going to be coming back to North America.
Woohoo!
In the form of Invisibles The Alliance for PS3, and Invisibles The Lost Kingdom, which came out in Europe last year. And the Vita is going to feature the augmented reality features that, you know, you would expect. But PS3 version, which is The Lost Kingdom, is going to shy away from augmented reality, instead being a colorful 3D action-adventure set in the Invisibles world.
Hey-o! Actually, I mean, I say that, but I'll probably not buy that.
Yeah, I've never really had too much of an interest, but hey, maybe you have.
They look really cute, though.
If you're someone who was upset that Invisibles The Lost Tribes never made it over to PSPs over here, then this will be good news for you.
Xbox, for those,
Do you want to talk about these controllers?
I do. For those of you who are into Microsoft's Chrome Series line of Xbox 360 controllers, they're adding both a purple chrome and a black chrome controller to this line. The black chrome controller will be available only at Walmart and the Microsoft Store, while the purple one will be available only at Best Buy and the Microsoft Store. These will retail for $55, and it's worth mentioning that 360 controllers are not compatible with the Xbox One.
Not compatible. Hey, guess what you can be playing on Vita?
Borderlands 2.
Now, the new slim version of the PS Vita is going to be part of the $200 Borderlands 2 bundle, including an 8GB memory card. It's a slimmer, lighter Vita with an LCD screen, which is kind of janky because, you know, that OLED screen is like the one hot, sexy thing about owning a Vita.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we've talked about this here on the show before. The LCD screen on the newer one looks pretty alright taken on its own, But in a side-by-side with that beautiful original OLED, it's kind of really a shame to see this inferior screen being put on the new model.
Yeah. You might have heard back in November or so that there was some mysterious Pokemon unlocked in Pokemon X and Y.
It's
Code.
Pikachu!
Pikablu. One of the most notable ones...
Fuck!
What? Oh. I see what you did there. One of the most notable ones was the pink rock fairy Pokemon, Diancie. And this Pokemon Diancie is going to be starring in the upcoming Pokemon movie, Cocoon of Destruction and Diancie. So the relevant piece of this being that Japanese gamers will probably be seeing some sort of tie-in event with Diancie, and she looks cool.
Yeah.
There were two other ones, Hoopa and what was that other one?
Volcanion.
Volcanion. We have no word yet on whether those will be distributed in some way, but
seems very likely at this
point. Yeah.
We have news that Octodad, the dadliest catch, will be getting a release on PlayStation 4 in April.
Cool, yeah, that was one of the titles they were kind of promoting at the PS4 launch. Not launch, the PS4 announce thing, which that was almost a year ago, wasn't it?
Indeed.
How time flies.
Speaking of time flying, you may recall here on Game Buoy, we were very, very sad to hear when Kenji Eino had passed away. Well, now his final project is going to be developed and crowdfunded by three of Eino-san's former colleagues. They will be launching the crowdfunding campaign in the next month, and it will be called Kakexun.
Yeah, I was going to try and say it in the Japanese way, but I'm like, wait, there's no X's. Kakexun.
Watch, it's like Kakcrossun.
Those damn X's. So you want to take this Oculus Rick? Oculus Rick?
I was Oculus like, did you say ovulate risk? Like, what?
No, I said Oculus Rick, which should be the mascot of Oculus Rift.
The Oculus Rift dev kit, as we know it, is going to be ceasing production. Apparently, the folks over at Oculus VR cannot construct additional dev kits beyond what they already have on hand, as some of the parts are no longer being manufactured. This is, of course, not the end of the Oculus Rift. However, there has long been discussion of the possible existence of a DevKit 2.0. And so quite a few people are thinking that maybe this is the first stepping stone to finally reaching that point and getting, a new DevKit set. And I recently got one of the original DevKit sets.
Yeah, you just got it just in time.
And I won't, I'll talk about that a little later, but I do want to say, it is a beautiful piece of tech, and if, they're going to upgrade for the next set, that's very exciting.
Yeah, excellent. PopCap has declared that, at least during this launch era of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, that they do not have microtransactions planned, which is, different from something like Plants vs. Zombies 2. So, they did say that they want to watch the in-game metrics and fan reaction to determine where to take the game next. PvZ Garden Warfare looks really cute. I haven't picked it up yet because it launched at a little bit higher price point than I was expecting. Not to be greedy or complain, but I'll probably pick it up. I hear it's really good. What I've watched of it looks really cute and a lot of fun.
I'm a little concerned that they don't have a roadmap prepared for where they're going with this game. I do think it looks very cute. I haven't picked it up yet because I have like three games I've picked up this year that I haven't gotten to playing yet, and my whole New Year's resolution was to play the games I buy. So until I play through Donkey Kong and Strider, it's unlikely that I'm really going to be buying too many more games. So I haven't grabbed Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare yet, but hopefully by the time I'm ready for it, it's come down a little in price, because as you say, I was expecting this to be like a $20 download title, not a $40 title. And, it's cool, I appreciate that they gotta do what they gotta do to turn a profit, but the water's not right for me to jump in yet.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland was talking with IGN and dropped the bomb that he was involved in the a new Mortal Kombat game. So we don't know who he did the voice of, but, you know, there were some drama, to use my word of the day, when he was announced as a new voice of Solid Snake. So it seems like he's really dipping into that video game voice acting sphere.
The crowdfunded point-and-click adventure game Mobius Empire Rising will make its debut on April 15th for Windows and Mac platforms via the newly formed publisher Phoenix Online Publishing.
Cool. Those of you who still don't own a 3DS or a 2DS, now
or,
is a real...
Or own one that hasn't been registered with Club Nintendo yet.
This is the perfect time to jump in, because if you register any system with Club Nintendo and register one of these great games, Mario Kart 7, Super Mario 3D Land, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, Lego City Undercover The Chase Begins, or Yoshi's New Island, you will get a free download code for Pokemon X or Y.
Part of me is mad that I'm not getting a free copy of Pokemon X and Y. And the other part of me owns every one of these games other than Yoshi's New Island and thinks I'm just being greedy. That having been said, if there's anyone out there who's been looking to jump on in to the 3DS family, there has never been a better time. Pokemon X and Y were obviously enormously successful. I think it's fair to say that they received more or less universal acclaim. These other games listed, in particular Mario Kart 7 and Mario 3D Land, are both incredible experiences. You can grab, you know, 2DS at this point, or an older, fatter 3DS, you know, for pretty cheap, grab one of these incredible games and get free Pokemon X or Y. Like, that is a hell of a deal for not a great deal of money.
Indeed. Deus Ex The Fall will be hitting March 25th. And this, of course, is the enhanced PC version of the iOS Android action RPG. It's only going to be $10. So, you know, from the screenshot, you know, it looks pretty good for an enhanced PC version of a mobile game.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I heard good things about this from fans of Deus Ex, so I'm really
right,
excited.
And it includes things like Steam trading cards and controller support.
Excellent. We have a game here, Tulpa, which is being sold as
Oprah.
Oh, goodness. A cross between Limbo, Alice, occultism, and two-character platforming.
That sounds up my alley.
It really does. This game, Tulpa, is presently on Steam Greenlight. They are hoping to release on PC, Mac, and Linux. The studio is Encryptique, and they are presently crowdfunding on Indiegogo to raise the last $4,500 needed to license Unity Pro so that they can release it professionally.
Two things. Encryptique sounds like a great drag queen name. Secondly, Scream Greenlight sounds appropriate for this spooky game.
Ooh.
Dynasty Warriors Gundam Reborn will be hitting this summer in North America and Europe for PS3. And this involves a variety of playable scenarios inspired by the past 30 years of Gundam anime and manga. So for you Gundam fans, you're going to probably be looking forward to this Tecmo Koei release.
This is, of course, the game that was released in Japan as Shin Gundam Musou.
Yeah.
Let's see. Turbine's long-standing MMO Asheron's Call is going to be going free. And it has been announced that Turbine will not be doing further updates beyond the updates that have been planned for March of this month. They are going to be allowing player-run servers at this point. It's basically, I've never seen anything like this. It's like the equivalent of an MMO going open source.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. I mean, you have to consider, this game is a 15-year-old game, so kudos to them for, you know, sticking with it and for allowing people to continue, you know, playing this game that they love.
Worms developers, Team 17, have revealed their new IP as Flockers.
What did you say?
Flockers.
That's rude.
Flockers.
You mother flocker.
This announcement was made at the PlayStation Open Day in Royal Leamington Spa in Warwickshire in England.
I don't know
Is that a real fucking place?
Apparently so. Game Boy field trip.
Yeah, if we're going on a Game Boy field trip, let's go somewhere that isn't that.
Yeah, I just know you don't want to go to a spa with me. I understand.
Ah, but no!
Gods Will Be Watching is going to be a point-and-click thriller due out in June for PC. It's dark, depressing, and mentally taxing.
Oh, I am here for it.
Just like some of our exes, huh?
Ah, but yeah.
It involves someone named Sergeant Burden, and you are stuck in the middle of violent interstellar tensions.
Sounds saucy.
Now, here's some drama-rama in the biggest way. Nintendo Wi-Fi connection for Wii and DS is ending on May 20th. This means that anything running on a Nintendo server, such as Mario Kart Wii and such, will no longer be accessible through for these online features. And, like, that also means, like, Pokemon Black 2, White 2. And this does not apply to, like, the DSi shop, the Wii U shop channel, or I think they mean to say the Wii shop channel.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it was a joystick typo. And things like Netflix, Hulu, and YouTube will still be accessible to the DS browser. You can go over to this joystick article on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Where they link to a Nintendo post of the list of affected games.
The bottom line is, any online game for the original DS or the original Wii after May 20th is not going to have online play anymore. Their shops will still sell games, you can still go and buy virtual console games or what have you, but you will not be able to play Mario Kart online, you won't be able to play Fortune Street online, you won't be able to play Smash Brothers online.
Pokemon, Black and White.
Any online game is no longer going to have online functions, basically.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
It is a big bummer.
You know, we talked about this with some of the Sony games and how it seemed very soon, but, you know, I guess they got to try and push that Wii U tip.
Ubisoft has opened up the doors for the Mighty Quest for Epic Loot open beta.
Cute. Mighty Quest for Epic Cute is more like it.
I downloaded it. I played for a minute. It was really cool. It was like a lightweight Diablo-alike. But with some really cool customization features, and, like, you build a castle, and, like, then you go raid other people's castles while other people are raiding your castle. It's really cool.
That's really cute.
So it's, yeah, I mean, I actually really liked it. Apparently, the closed beta was heavily criticized for being super microtransaction-focused. But I can tell you, in my time with the open beta, I did not feel like I had to do microtransactions in order to win. And
that's
admittedly
good.
I didn't play a ton, but what I did see looked pretty good.
Excellent. So those of you who are fans of Swords and Soldiers, which was a WiiWare title that later made its way to PSN and Steam, they will be looking forward to Swords and Soldiers 2. Also from Ronimo Games, which is best known for the 2D MOBA Awesomenauts. If you are interested in playing this, you will have to go to PAX East in Boston, and you would have already have to have had a ticket, because that sold out like hella fast. It will also be shown behind closed doors at the GDC conference later this month, here in beautiful, cloudy, perpetually 65 degrees San Francisco.
Ah, you know, you say that, but it's like 73 degrees right now.
I know, it's roasting. I hate it.
In this, and this is rather big news, we have an announcement from Atlus that a port of the original Shin Megami Tensei is coming to iOS in North America on March 18th.
That's so cool.
This is huge news, in part because we have never gotten this game released in North America.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
For those of you who are very excited to play this game, finally in English, professionally, you know, with not just like a fan-translated SNES ROM, please support this game. It's going to be coming out onto the App Store for $7.99 on March 18th, and I would think that we want this to do well if we want to see the other iterations of this series. So
yeah.
I implore you, if you're into this series, please support it.
Year of Atlas, once again.
Every year is Year of
basically
Atlas.
Basically Decade of Atlas. It's basically Atlas forever. Anomaly 2 is going to be coming to PS4 this spring. And it is a tower offense game. You didn't hear that wrong. That reverses the idea and the mechanics of the tower defense genre. And you are challenged to outwit enemy defenses while directing a squad of armed troops. And there will be a multiplayer mode, which lets you do traditional tower defense tactics. Seems pretty cool. It's also available for Windows, Mac, and Linux via Steam. But if you're wanting to do this on the PS4, you have not much longer to wait.
We also have news that the new Tony Hawk game is going to be exclusively for mobile.
That said, you could do like little kickflips by like using, you know, like those tech deck things that were
that
popular.
That sounds awful and you should feel bad for it. If y'all out there in internet radio land don't know what Slackick is talking about, he literally like made a pantomiming motion of like flipping his phone.
Tech decks, remember those?
Yes, I remember tech decks. I was alive in the 90s.
Will you still be able to do Create a Skater for this new Tony Hawk?
I don't think we know that yet.
That was always my favorite part because I wanted to make like hot skater studs.
He was a skater boy. She said, see you later, boy.
Disgaea characters are going to be serving some cross-game synergy realness via the Vita dungeon crawl game, Demon Gaze. That's G-A-Z-E. Not G-A-Y-S.
Early adopters who buy this game when it comes out on April 22nd, up to the first month of its release, will be able to download for free Etna, Flawn, Sicily, Asagi, and Aprini.
Okay, dude! The PS4 port of Dead Nation Apocalypse Edition has an interesting feature called Broadcast Plus. Streamers can have viewers directly affect their game through a voting mechanic, which is kind of interesting. It makes me think of the Twitch Plays Pokemon thing in a way.
Well, yeah, right? In fact, it's funny, during certain sections, democracy will be triggered, and viewers on PlayStation 4 or through Twitch's website can aid survivors with things like additional ammo or up the difficulty by spawning more zombies.
I think this is a really compelling direction for games to be moving, but also there's the potential for troll-a-la-la-lol. Like,
more zombies, more zombies, more zombies, more zombies.
Cell Damage HD is coming to the Sony family of consoles and portables this spring. And, I mean, Cell Damage was over almost 15 years ago in 2001 for
yeah.
the Xbox.
Yep.
And, you know, it was not maybe the most popular, but it was a fun little thing. And this cartoonish brand of twisted metal sort of mayhem is going to be coming soon to your Sony console or portable of choice. But not PSP. Sorry, that thing's dead now.
Bum bum ba bum. We have news that Ether 1, which is a point-and-shoot camera game for PC, will be releasing on March 25th. This is supposed to be like a very like psychological horror game about like coping with mental illness and, you know, superpowers.
Interceptor Entertainment, who developed the Rise of the Triad reboot last year, it has acquired Apogee Software, which you probably know most from 3D Realms. So they now own 3D Realms.
Woohoo! Duke Nukem Forever! Forever!
Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game, is going to be out on April 29th. It will have a pre-order costume bonus. This is available for 360, Xbox One, PC, Wii U, 3DS, PS3, and PS4.
Included in the Web Threads Suit Pack DLC, which is what you'll get if you pre-order this game at Game in the UK or GameStop, is the Spider-Man Red and Gold Iron Spider suit, the Cosmic Spider-Man suit, which you may recall from the 80s when he was possessed by the, well, not possessed by the Power Cosmic, but possessed the Power Cosmic, the Spider-Man Noir costume from the Noir series, and the black suit that most of us know as just, you know, the symbiote costume, or, you know, more appropriately as, you know, Venom.
Yeah. I just want a extra bootylicious Andrew Garfield costume.
Deadass. We have news that Vlambeer's Luftwasser is going to be debuting on the PSN and PC on March 18th.
I didn't know you spoke German.
I don't.
See, the proper answer would be, I don't speak German, but I can if you like.
Ah!
Well, you just went on ahead with that joke. Luftwaffe is a cross-buy release, and buyers who purchase the PS3 version will also get the Vita version at the same time.
It looks super cute. In German, please.
Ah! Rocksteady has announced its newest game in the Batman Arkham series. This one is Batman Arkham Knight. That is Knight spelled with a K. This is going to be a current-gen game, so this is going to be only for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. We're not going to be seeing a Wii U version, or a PS3 version, or a 360 version. We don't know a great deal about the game yet, other than that it is scheduled for a worldwide release in 2014, and it looks like there has, since its original announcement, been some leaked advertisement art that indicates that it's going to be releasing on October 14th of 2014.
With Harley Quinn as a pre-order bonus.
Oh, how fun. Playable Harley Quinn.
She's super cute. Picross E4 is heading to the 3DS eShop in April.
Woo!
The Jupiter Puzzler will feature new puzzles and new 20x15 puzzles. I don't know too much about Picross, but that must be notable in some way. Bigger puzzles? They're just bigger?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're bigger. That it is does what it says on the tin.
Bigger and better.
We also have news that the internet meme-inspiring Goat Simulator is now going to be a real game, and it is going to launch on April 1st. If you're not familiar with the internet phenomenon that briefly was Goat Simulator, I highly recommend you look up the trailer for it on YouTube.
I hope that it can be a screaming goat like in the Taylor Swift meme video. Xbox Music is bringing 92,000 music videos to the Xbone. All you have to do is say Xbox Play when you go to a playlist, and the videos will appear on screen.
So, this is pretty neat. You know, this is going to be a music video streaming service. It's going to have a flat $10 per month fee. There is going to be a free 30-day trial available. And basically, the idea is just to stream music videos to your Xbox from a fairly large library of, you know, as you said, 92,000.
Nice. Tropico 5 will be soaking up some early summer rays on PC and 360. That's what Joystick said, and I thought that was a fun way to say it. PS4 version's due to launch later this year. And, yeah, it's the first Tropico game to feature co-op and competitive multiplayer modes.
And there is going to be a beta test scheduled to begin later this month.
Battle Block Theater is coming to Steam with a closed beta beginning this month. And this is a co-op platformer that initially was released on Xbox Live Arcade. It will feature a number of features that weren't in that release, including weapon switching, new enemy types, and online item trading with the Steam inventory, as well as Steam Workshop integration. Those of you interested in the closed beta test, You can sign up. There's a link over on the joystick article at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
It's going to be from March 24th through March 31st. Powerpuff Girls Defender of... I almost said Farmville. Powerpuff Girls Defenders of Townsville is coming to Steam March 14th.
Now, the most awesome part about this game is that, you know, by its name, you would think that it was a tower defense game, but it's apparently a Powerpuff Girls-themed Metroidvania.
That is so rad.
Please look forward to that on March 14th. It will be available on Linux, Mac, and PC platforms.
Excellent.
The creators of Burnout Paradise, Criterion Games co-founders Alex Ward and Fiona Sperry have both left Criterion in order to open a new studio called Three Fields Entertainment. They have indicated on Twitter that they will be making games for all platforms where we can self-publish. This was an internal decision to move away from sort of the tyranny of working with EA.
Boo to EA. I mean, but not really, but sometimes. Pixel Dunk Shooter Ultimate HD
is heading to PlayStation 4
yes.
and Vita this summer.
This is an upgraded compilation coming to the PS4 and Vita that combines 2009's Pixel Junk Shooter and 2011's Pixel Junk Shooter 2. It's going to be playing at 60 frames per second on the PS4, and the PS Vita version is similarly tweaked and optimized. That's cute that they just say optimize. It features cross-save, cross-play. It doesn't say whether it's cross-buy, but, you know, for a indie game, you know, if you're a Pixel Junk fan and you own both of them, why not?
I love those Pixel Junk games.
Pixel Junk is some great and not junk.
Moving on to probably the most exciting news story of the year.
Oh my god, yes!
Shaq returns in Shaq Fu 2, A Legend Reborn.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's really serving up some beautiful cel-shaded Street Fighter 4 realness. If you're interested in helping support this dream become a reality, you know, we've just been wanting this for years. You can go over to their Indiegogo page. It's seeking $450,000, so pretty modest. It's being developed by, you know, the prolific Big D's production, D-E-E-Z. We joke, but, you know, these Big D's includes... Ooh, Big D's. I didn't even think about that. Includes former AAA developers who had worked on Halo, Street Fighter, Final Fantasy, Alan Wake, Battlefield, Killzone, and more.
The Indiegogo campaign is set to end on April 20th. And it does have stretch goals, including coming to additional platforms such as iOS and Android, Xbox 360 and PS3, Vita and 3DS, Wii U, and Xbox One and PS4. So let's hope it at least comes out for Wii U so that we can have Shaq Fu 2 on Wii U.
Shaq Fu 2 Wii U. XSEED is bringing Akiba's Trip 2 to North America this summer. They are trying to give us more clothes-ripping action. You might remember we talked about Senran Kagura Burst, where there were busty babes bursting out of their clothes, and how that was kind of problematic, but... Yeah, if you want to go check out an NSFW trailer of the Japanese version.
Which features both male and female vampires getting disrobed and disintegrating.
Yeah, I guess equal opportunity at least. Yeah, so, I mean, kind of interesting, but, you know, XSEED at least is bringing games that people want.
You know, there's a market for these sort of stranger experiences, and if people are enjoying them, then I'm happy they're coming over.
The co-founder of Arcado, Aurelien Rigard, is that really that person's name?
Yes.
That's kind of a cool name. Is developing the stylish PC racer, the next Penelope, Race to Odysseus, which is inspired by F-Zero.
Hey!
So that looks pretty cool. Aurelien Rigard might be most noted for last year's Poof versus the Cursed Kitty, which was available on PC.
Mugen Souls Z, the Compile Heart developed Japanese RPG for PlayStation 3, will be arriving in North America on May 20th and in Europe on May 23rd. Publisher NIS America has confirmed to Gematsu.
Very cool. Azure Strike Gunbolt is coming to the 3DS eShop this summer. This is being created by the Inti Creates studio, which is best known for Mega Man 9 and Mega Man ZX. And I know that you are very excited about this 2D scrolling action game with psychic powers.
You know, it's worth mentioning that Inti Creates are also being tapped for Mighty No. 9. They're doing some work on the HD Shantae game. You know, they cut their teeth on Mega Man games. So I think it makes a lot of sense that Inafune-san and his various collaborators are working with Inti Creates on sort of these very Mega Man-inspired projects.
Yeah, because what I didn't mention is that Inafune-san is the executive producer of Azure Striker Gunvolt, which will launch in Japan as ARM Striker Gunvolt.
Yeah, and you know, this is obviously very Mega Man-inspired. It looks a little bit closer in tone to the Mega Man Zero sub-franchise, which was the GBA series, you know, obviously based around Zero, the Mega Man X character. The trailer just looks phenomenal. I cannot wait for this game. And, you know, I also just want to point out that Azure Striker Gunvolt, that, again, seems like a Mega Man reference when you consider that the nickname that Capcom has used for Mega Man since the 80s was the Blue Bomber.
Yeah. 17-Bit, who created Skulls of the Shogun, is going to be bringing their top-down shooter Galaxy to the Vita. You know, they had, they're still committed to launching it on PS4 and PC, but now they're going to be bringing a Vita version. This game has been described as a sped-up version of Asteroid on psychedelic drugs.
I am here for that.
And last but least, IDK, GameStop is raising the price of the PS4 camera due to dwindling supplies. They're bumping it up $10.
So this is really just another reason why GameStop is fucking awful. I know that Rob Roberts over at Orange Lounge Radio was fuming when he heard this news. These cameras have basically been out of supply everywhere, and somehow GameStop got their hands on a ton of them and jacked up the price to sell them.
That's shady. So now if you want a PS4 camera, you gotta shell out $70 at GameStop.
You know what else sucks?
What?
Doom and gloom.
Doom and gloom.
So Sega has slashed its profit forecast by 36%. This is mostly due to a decline in its patchy slot and pachinko business. So that's kind of a bummer, but kind of not too worrisome because, you know, it's the patchy slot.
You know, I'm always upset and concerned when I see any publisher, developer, you know, with lower profit forecasts, because that's never good for business. But I'm really happy that the declines were cited in patchy slot and pachinko rather than in their video gaming division.
Yeah. Disney Interactive has laid off about 700 employees, which is about 25% of its workforce. This was the result of a company restructure. Quote from Disney spokesperson said, "Disney Interactive has consolidated several lines of business as part of an effort to focus the division on a streamlined suite of high-quality digital products."
So fucking shit, man. 700 people out of work. That is a lot.
Yeah, the layoffs have hit Playdom the hardest, which was kind of a focus on free online games like Disney City Girl, why did I not know that existed? That I'm basically a Disney City Girl. Marvel's Avengers Alliance, Pirates of the Caribbean, Isles of War.
Yeah, that's really sad. We here at Game Buoy are absolutely crushed to hear about this having happened. Our hearts and thoughts go out with anyone whose employment was affected by this restructuring.
Eidos Montreal, which is the developer of Thief, laid off 27 employees. They said, you know, it's unfortunately something that every major studio has to do to ensure you have the right setup for current and future products.
AAA gaming, woo!
And, you know, I don't know if this had something to do with the kind of getting lukewarm reviews.
You know, it probably did.
And Sony Santa Monica, which has, you know, kind of had its own share of troubles over the years, has laid off a certain number of people. We don't know how much, but its citation has been resource realignment against priority growth areas within Sony Worldwide Studios.
And, you know, we do know that the new IP that they were working on has been canceled.
That's a bummer.
Stig Asmussen was working on this new IP for several years, in fact. And it was a part, like, that project was canceled as a part of these layoffs.
Yeah, they are still due to be launching their collaborations, Hohokum, The Order 1886, and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. But in terms of, you know, their other projects, that's a bummer. So, something that was kind of a big deal was Ken Levine, who, you know, is the genius behind things like BioShock, revealed that Irrational Games is going to be changing its internal focus, which resulted in a massive layoff of most of its staff. He wants to really focus on, you know, more smaller focused projects, narrative-driven games that are highly replayable, and this, you know, kind of is a bummer for those of us who are a huge fan of BioShock Infinite and the BioShock series, because, you know, clearly, I'm sure 2K is going to be continuing to make BioShock games, and, you know, just kind of have to worry about how that series will be handled without the creative genius that Irrational is. But on,
you know, it's easy to say that, but BioShock 2 was made without those guys, and I think that that was a superb game that, as a game,
true,
was better than the first BioShock.
That's true. So, you know, and the good news from this is that, you know, I'm sure we're going to be seeing some amazing gems coming out of the new and streamlined Irrational.
Still, though, our hearts and thoughts go out to everyone whose employment was affected by this restructuring.
So, Sony stores are closing. 20 are closing, 11 will remain open, which are mostly in California, New York, and then a couple in Florida and Texas. Sony is selling its Vio PC brand, so, you know, it's kind of some restructuring going on in the Sony sphere.
Our thoughts and hearts go out to anyone whose employment was affected by this corporate restructuring.
Yeah, you know, I liked Sony Vios. They were good.
Yeah, I run a Vio. When my laptop dies, I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Oh, no. Amy Hedig, who was a writer on Uncharted and a creative director, has parted ways with Naughty Dog. We're not really sure what these circumstances are. We hope that it was an amicable split, but we hope that it wasn't the result of anything shadier having to do with women in gaming.
You know,
there's
a lot of talk about exactly those issues right now. We are not talking about them here on this show because to date, presently, it remains rumors and speculation, and I don't want to feed into that if it's not a real thing. So we sincerely hope that this was an amicable split and that Miss Hennig is off to bigger and better things.
Yeah. Radio Shack is closing 1,100 of its stores. The reason that this is relevant to gaming is that about 7 years ago, they started selling video games, consoles, and allowing trade-ins to try to, you know, so it sounds like they've kind of been in trouble for a while.
They have been in trouble for a while, and they've actually done video game sales at a lot of their locations for basically ever.
Oh, really?
When I was a kid, my local Radio Shack was one of the only places you could go to buy Atari 2600 games.
Ah, interesting.
So I certainly think of Radio Shack as a retailer that carries games. I was surprised, in fact, recently to hear that there were some people who did not see them that way. In any event, it's sad that they're going to be closing 20% of their total retail locations. And as always, we here at Game Buoy send out our hearts and thoughts to anyone whose continued employment might have been adversely affected by this corporate restructuring.
Jack Tretton is not renewing his contract with SCEA, so he will no longer be the president and CEO of Sony Computer Entertainment America as of March 31st. And this was a mutual agreement between the company and Tretton. The current EVP, executive vice president, is that what E means?
I think.
Erotic vice president. And
ew.
And COO of Sony Network Entertainment International, Sean Layden, is stepping into his spot. He has been with PlayStation for 15 years, but Tretton has been with SCEA since 1995. He describes the experience as the most rewarding experience of his career, and that he will miss the talented team and the passion demonstrated every day by fans. He is excited to start the next step in his career. I paraphrased a bit. Woo! So, best of luck, Jack Tretton. But, you know, kind of leading Sony into new waters.
All right, well, with that having been said, it's time for the meat and potatoes of this episode.
Movie Booey!
We are going to talk about video game movies.
Video game movies, the movie of the game.
Right? So to get us started, we have two real quick news bits that are going to transition us into this conversation. Slaggy McWaggy, if you'd like to take one of these.
Award-winning The Last of Us is going to be adapted into a movie from Screen Gems, the studio who is behind the Resident Evil franchise. And notably, it will be produced by Sam Raimi, which you might, those of you who follow video game movie news, he was involved for a long time with the Warcraft movie, but stepped out.
Yeah, back when it looked like it wasn't going to get made, he was the man involved.
Yeah, so now you can watch Ellie, isn't that her name? Ellie and what's-his-face in the movie. But yeah, so I mean, definitely capitalizing on the, you know, extremely warm reception from most people about this game. And an interesting and kind of appropriate news, the Lego Movie producer has been tapped for a potential Minecraft movie. This does not mean that they are necessarily confirmed, but, you know, they're, Notch has revealed that he's in talks with Warner Brothers. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Minecraft is huge, like, especially among, like, boys ages 8 to 12. Like, Minecraft is huge, 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 huge. So, I mean, I would say that Lego movie, which was really well received, having the Lego movie peeps involved in that would make sense. You just have to wonder if there would be Minecraft the movie, the game.
I hope there would. We don't get enough of the movie, the game anymore.
Game Buoy, the movie, the game.
We need someone to make a Game Buoy game.
A Game Buoy movie, and then there can be Game Buoy movie, the game.
Okay, let's make a Game Buoy movie so that we can then make a Game Buoy movie, the game.
Well, there'll be a Game Buoy game, then a Game Buoy movie, then a Game Buoy movie, the game.
In any event, the way we're going to do this, because, you know, it would be impossible for us to really, truly talk about every video game movie. We're going to talk about 7 or 8 of the classics, and then we're going to talk about 7 or 8 of the games, or the games, the movie game movies.
GameMovies.org.
That were released sort of once people realized that video game movies were crap, and we're going to call that the ghetto. And then we're going to talk sort of about the rebirth of video game movies as, like, viable releases that studios can profit from and people can enjoy. Before talking a little bit about the future, we also have a few fun sidebars for you. So let's get this show on the roll. Slaggy, I believe the first game movie that you wanted to talk about was the Super Mario Brothers film.
And now, was this the first game movie?
You know, I couldn't say that for sure, but in the context of this conversation, I think so.
I mean, it stood out to me as a young child as being the first video game movie. And the thing about Super Mario Brothers is it's kind of a mess, but you can't help but love it. I mean, John Leguizamo played a really sexy Luigi sans mustache for some reason. And of course, Dennis Hopper is pretty,
iconic.
Pretty iconic as King Koopa. You know, a lot of people's issue, I think, with Super Mario Brothers the movie is that it took creative licenses with the ideas of, Mario. And, you know, it was a critical failure. As far as I know, Miyamoto-san was, like, appalled by it. And that's pretty much why Nintendo has forbidden any sort of video game adaptation movies. But, you know, it's fun in its own way. You know, it's trying to incorporate the mythos of the Mario universe. It starred Mario and Luigi. Bob Hoskins, of course, was Mario, who you probably most remember from Roger Rabbit. You know, that was an iconic role for him. It involved some mafia drama. They were Italian-American plumbers in Brooklyn, which kind of was really just a Western narrative invented in the early days of the Mario franchise. So.
Although it has sort of stuck around, you know, that interpretation of the story is still kind of the commonly accepted one.
Yeah. It notably stars Daisy. Hi, I'm Daisy. So, you know, it was kind of a mess, but, you know, I enjoy it. You know, you have to look at it through the lens of early 90s, like, video games, Power Rangers, action, stuff for boys, like that sort of lens.
I'm sorry, are we talking about Mario Brothers or Mortal Kombat?
Well... one thing leads to another. I kind of appreciate it as a really, I don't want to say avant-garde, but like a really, like, interesting interpretation.
Did you just use the word avant-garde in a conversation about Super Mario Brothers the movie?
I said it's not avant-garde, but I mean, like, you think of Toad being, like, played by a dude instead of, like, being a little mushroom guy. And really just kind of the way that they did try to, you know, try to make nods to the games. Like, Big Bertha was the lounge singer, and wasn't she in the Boom Boom Room?
I believe so.
Because, of course, Boom Boom Room was the name of the room where you fight Boom Boom in Super Mario 3. I mean, I think that was official, right, in the manual, like, it's the Boom Boom Room? All I know is that my sister and I called it the Boom Boom Room, and we would always laugh about it because it sounded like a strip joint.
Y'all need Jesus.
But that's kind of what the Boom Boom Room was in Super Mario Brothers the movie. How did you react to it at the time, Captain Spike?
Open the door, get on the floor, everybody walk the dinosaur.
Ah!
I had the soundtrack CD for the Mario Brothers movie. I still do, in fact, have the soundtrack CD for Super Mario Brothers the movie. You know, I didn't like that Yoshi became a little Tyrannosaurus Rex. I thought that basically everything about the movie was dumb as hell. And yet, I do have a soft spot in my heart for it because, you know, it is like you say, and I guess I get it. This is nostalgic for me. It's a mess, but it's well-intentioned, and it paved the way for video game movies to be a thing.
Yeah, it really did. You know, speaking of that soundtrack, I remember that Roxette song playing over the credits.
You got the time!
And the Divinyls did a Roxy Music cover. Like,
yes!
And I looked up on Wikipedia, apparently Walk the Dinosaur had, on its CD singles, rest in peace, a club remix, a funky Goomba remix, and a Goomba dub remix.
Ah!
So, yeah, you know, on the one hand, it was like, what is this hot mess? On the other hand, you have to appreciate it for it's kind of like...
They tried.
For trying to interpret this much-loved video game series into a movie. And I think one misstep that a lot of people feel is that it wasn't Mario enough, you know, especially those of us who grew up watching even the Super Mario Brothers Super Show and the Mario cartoons. It was very different.
Yeah, you know, again, it is a mess. It's not a good film by any means, but, you know, they tried. They really did try to make a movie based on Mario Brothers and flesh out the universe, and it may not have been a success, but they tried. I'm sorry, it is laughably bad. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's what matters. Is it fun? And yes, it is.
All right, well, why don't we move on to another awful, awful, awful adaptation and talk about the Double Dragon film. You may recall this for having this film for having Alyssa Milano play as Marion.
Oh my god, I'm Alyssa Milano.
And, you know, sort of one of the funny things to me is that this movie took place in the then futuristic 2007.
Whoa!
In Los Angeles, where things were sort of like post-apocalyptic.
No, you mean New Angeles. Well,
okay, yeah. They, in the film, called it New Angeles as like, ooh, future Neo Los Angeles. But something that's funny to me is I don't really recall the post-apocalyptic narrative being a thing in the Double Dragon games originally, but I do think in the more recent Double Dragon games,
yeah,
Neon, for example, the Neo Geo fighting games, Rise of the Dragons or whatever, I do think that they have taken that post-apocalyptic angle to the proceedings.
The villain of this movie was adapted into the Double Dragon fighting game, which was based on the film.
Interesting. The thing that really most stuck out for me was that
Vanna White's guest role as an anchorwoman.
I actually saw this movie opening day in the theater, because I fucking loved Double Dragon as a kid. And this movie was fucking a mess. It is awful. Abobo, who is, of course, one of the enemy characters in the game, he, like, has dreads and wears glasses or something. He looks like a Mad Gear game. Oh, wait, no! He's the bald one that looks all lumpy and muscly. I was thinking of a character from Final Fight for a second. Either way, in this game, he's a mutant with giant muscles. In this movie, he's a mutant with giant muscles.
Yeah, Billy was played by Scott Wolfe. So, did you think he was kind of dreamy and hunky in the movie?
He was. He was hella cute.
How about Jimmy? Like, was Jimmy a cutie in the movie?
He wasn't Fug, but
he wasn't Scott Wolf.
He wasn't Scott Wolf. Oh, wow. That guy who played Jimmy is the chairman in the American version of Iron Chef.
Oh, wow.
So that's actually probably a step up for his career. This movie is awful. I have not watched it in probably 10 years, probably 20 years. A lot of people often when talking to me about Game Buoy say that, you know, I have a tendency to point out the good in things, and that's true. I find it easier to find things in art I like than to dwell on the things I don't. I can honestly say there is nothing redeeming about Double Dragon. You know, we're talking here about, like, its contributions to the Double Dragon narrative. Like, if that's the highlight of your movie, think about that for a minute. In fact, when this film came out, I'm pretty sure it got, like, unanimously, like, worst possible ratings. Slag, why don't you open up, Rotten Tomatoes.
So, I wonder if this is an error because it has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. I mean, that sounds about appropriate. Double Dragon has a 0 rating. You know, and I have to say, honestly, this back-to-back with the Mario Brothers movie, it is a shock that other video game movies got made.
Yeah, I mean, this this we kind of lovingly refer to as the hot mess era of video game movies. Because also in 1994, we had Street Fighter, which I know a couple of our, I think a couple of our listeners in our social links said that they have a fondness for it. But Captain Spike, tell us a little bit why you feel Street Fighter the movie was a hot mess.
I mean, anyone who's seen it, come on. You know, Raul Julia was great as Bison, I guess.
Yeah, that was his last role. Can you imagine that being your final role?
They did release another movie after that, but I understand that this was the last movie that he had finished acting in.
Right, right. So the last one, the other was released posthumously then.
Yes. You know, there was Kylie Minogue as Cammy. She was actually really great. We had Jean-Claude Van Damme as Guile, you know, without the trademark hair, but otherwise appropriately. I'm talking about the cast here a lot because the story was a mess. They basically took, like, the basic idea of the Street Fighter canon as it existed at the time, which was basically just, like, the core 8 world warriors and the 4 bosses, and, you know, Ganon. M. Bison has the Shadow Liu organization. And they basically turned it into a whole, like, political thriller action movie, almost like a G.I. Joe movie with, like, Bison threatening to take over part of the world or something.
Like, did it have a lot of street fighting, though? That's what I want to know.
Not as much as I would have liked.
And now, see, there's a movie that we'll be talking about later, which I think really successfully presented itself as a fighting game movie. But it wasn't Mortal Kombat. Now, Mortal Kombat from 1995, you know, that was right in the middle of Mortal Mania.
You know, I still have a comment to make about the Street Fighter 2 movie. Is around the same time, and we're going to talk about this a little more in a sidebar later, there was an anime movie about Street Fighter 2 just called Street Fighter 2 The Motion Picture in the U.S. And it was an anime adaptation of a somewhat similar story, but really just made really good. Like, it was about Street Fighter with some cool street fighting fights and, like, again, a plot that made sense within the context of Street Fighter. The Street Fighter movie that we got, it's a mess. It is fun. Raul Julia delightfully chews every scene he's in, so it's a lot of fun. But I'm sorry, let's get to Mortal Kombat, because I know that you've watched that recently.
Yeah, now one notable movie game piece of history is that this was like the first success for Paul W.S. Anderson and really enabled him to keep making both video game movies and non-video game movies. Now, Mortal Kombat is in a similar way to Super Mario Brothers, kind of cheesy in that early mid-90s way. But, I mean, you have to consider the source material, honestly. I mean, considering that it's based on kind of a over-the-top game in the first place, I think that it's enjoyable. I mean, it's not a good movie, but it's fun in a guilty pleasure sort of way. We're talking things like Reptile being really bad, CG, although it looked more like stop motion. I have to wonder.
It was CGI, but it was early CGI.
Yeah, and then like Scorpion when he goes, "Come over here," with like the little scorpion hookshot thing, I want to call it. Just looks really bad. But, you know, you have like Johnny Cage and Liu Kang kind of being bros. Sonya Blade's there, and it's kind of like, it's kind of fun in its own way. And then there's like the romance angle with Princess Katana. And,
you know, the funny thing is, watching it from a modern-day perspective, this movie is a mess. Like, you look at it and like, oh, these effects are awful. this storyline doesn't make any sense. And it feels like an American-made, like, late 70s Hong Kong film, almost.
Yeah, you were kind of pointing out those correlations last night.
So, you know, I remember seeing this at the time, though. And, you know, this movie, at the time, was cited by a lot of people as proof that video game movies can work. It uh-huh. was, at the time, well-received by fans, like, widely. And even quite a few critics gave it positive reviews.
I mean, the thing about Mortal Kombat is that, unlike Street Fighter, I mean, it's about a fighting tournament. You know, it's... I think where Street Fighter probably had its misstep was focusing too much on the Shadaloo Syndicate and everything. And, you know, this Mortal Kombat movie, you know, really had a lot of fighting. It had, you know, Liu Kang. Was it Liu Kang and Scorpion or Liu Kang and... It was Liu Kang and Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
And Johnny Cage versus Scorpion. You know, they were cheesy dad effects, but it was fun. And then Goro was a laugh. But, you know, it's good fun. It really is. Captain Spike, do you have anything to say about the Wing Commander movie?
You mean other than how much I wanted to bang Freddie Prinze Jr. in 1999,
hey,
right?
Hey, well, who didn't want to bang Freddie Prinze Jr. in 1999?
You know, so the funny thing about Wing Commander is that I kind of like it more as an adult than I did when it came out. This movie, it's not a good movie, but it's not bad. I mean, you know, it's none of the Uwe Boll video game movies.
Oh, no!
Which, unfortunately, we will be talking about. But, you know, like Freddie Prinze Jr., for example, he actually acted in that movie. Like, his performance was pretty good. And they didn't really pitch it as, like, a cheesy video game movie at all. Like, you know, these other game movies that we've talked about here so far have had the distinct air of, like, cheesiness and over the top, and, like, this is clearly a video game movie. Wing Commander, I could see someone who didn't know better just thinking they were going to see a sci-fi film, not realizing it was a game movie.
Interesting.
And, you know, there were Kilrathi in the movie, which, you know, the cat aliens from the series, like, they were in the movie. Like, I don't know, it's... I felt like as an adaptation, it was fairly successful, it just wasn't super good.
And it almost seemed like this era of video game movies was trying to focus or move away from the over-the-top, clearly video game movies and make an experience that was more accessible to the common moviegoer.
Because yeah, I think that
like,
would be true.
Tomb Raider, which Laura Croft being played by
Angelina Jolie.
Miss Angelina Jolie, yes.
In fact, you know, why don't we... Because I don't really have a lot to say about Wing Commander other than, you know, it's not awful anymore. I mean, watching it now, it doesn't seem nearly as bad as it did at the time.
Does Freddie Prinze have any shirtless scenes?
I don't remember, but I haven't watched it in, you know, 3 or 4 years, so maybe you and I should watch it.
Maybe so.
But why don't we talk about Tomb Raider a little bit?
Yes, Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Well, you know, this was a big deal at the time because, I mean, you think of some of the other video game movies having pretty big deal actors, but, I mean, Angelina Jolie just was, like, the it girl back in 2001.
And let's be real, she kind of still is.
Yeah. And, I mean, of course, this was 2001 era Lara Croft, so she even had the big breasts that Laura was known for. Although I guess that was kind of true for Angelina too, which is why people made a big deal when she had breast cancer and had them removed.
Well, when she was at risk for breast cancer and had them removed.
Right. And you know, you described Lara Croft Tomb Raider to me as the National Treasure movies before the National Treasure movies were a thing.
Yeah, and you know, to me, it's funny because I described it to you that way earlier this week when we were talking about doing this show today. And, you know, you had talked today about how this era of video game movies was, sort of getting away from the cheesier aspects of video game movies and making movies that were more palatable to a wide audience. And I do think you're absolutely right. Tomb Raider is really where you saw that in effect. And again, you know, you look at the DNA of this movie. It's very much, you know, National Treasure or like an Indiana Jones style caper. And, you know, obviously anyone old enough to be listening to this show probably remembers how big the Tomb Raider movies were.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that it was, critically, it was very negatively received. It's got a 19% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But financially, it was a box office success. And it beat the opening record for a video game adaptation movie, which had been set by Pokemon, the first movie, which, spoiler alert, we're not going to really talk about because we kind of talked about Pokemon already. But it also had the weird dichotomy of being nominated for Razzies, but also for MTV Movie Awards. But it lost to Moulin Rouge for Best Female Performance and Rush Hour 2 for Best Fight Scene.
Okay, I will never get giving Best Fight Scene to Rush Hour 2, but I'm happy that Moulin Rouge got Best Female Performance. Right. But this isn't Movie Buoy.
Well, it is today. And, you know, something that was kind of interesting is that it had been planned since, like, the later 90s, but it had a couple of delays. And so, you know, it was successful enough to have – did it have three – was it a trilogy of movies or just
– there were only two. The second one was –
The Cradle of Life, which I always call The Cradle of Filth.
Devoid of all breath in the air.
Aha! So anything else to say about Lara Croft Tomb Raider? I mean, it was really at the height of the old school of Tomb Raider's popularity, I feel.
This movie was notable for, I think, being the first on-screen reunion of Angelina Jolie and her father, John Voight.
Oh, that's right! Because there was some drama there.
Drama!
And, you know, kind of interestingly, well, not interestingly, but we all know that Tomb Raider has really made an effort under Crystal Dynamics' watch to, you know, move away from the old type of Lara. But I would like to see a new Lara movie.
Yeah, I would too. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that that's a thing that they're planning.
Excellent.
So in any event, and let's talk about one that I know you have a lot to say about. And this is, I think, probably where we're going to get the majority of our slag kick in today. Why don't you talk about The Spirits Within Final Fantasy?
Right. Now, the thing about The Spirits Within is that, you know, it's most famous for Square Pictures over in Hawaii and how that basically bankrupted Square at the time because it did not do well at the box office. It only made about $85 million at the box office but cost $137 million. The thing is, it's a great movie. I think the problem that a lot of people had is that they would have wanted to see, oh, I want to see Cloud from Final Fantasy VII in a movie, but it wasn't based on any existing Final Fantasy narrative. It was just Final Fantasy in terms of its themes, and, you know, of course, there's a Cid in the movie, you know, so it definitely has a lot of the Final Fantasy tropes. But, you know, I think a lot of people didn't appreciate it for the Final Fantasy aspects that it had. You kind of, like, banding together to overcome a greater evil. You know, and I mean, at the time, you know, the Final Fantasy franchise was very kind of sci-fi focused with, you know, 7 and 8 both having a lot of very sci-fi elements. But I mean, it was really a great movie. I mean, even, you know, still today it looks very beautiful. You know, Square has always been kind of at the cutting edge of their CG, even back in the day. But, You know, I still think it looks fantastic, not creepy Uncanny Valley. And really kind of a little bit of, a little spoopy in some ways. You know, it kind of had the phantoms and all of that. So I thought it was a really compelling narrative. I thought it was really, really well done. You know, Alec Baldwin was the main guy. Gray Edwards. And so, you know, it definitely felt like a Final Fantasy to me, and I don't know why people disagreed.
You know, I actually quite agree with you. Especially, to me, it is a Final Fantasy story. It feels like a Final Fantasy story, and I almost wonder if people wouldn't enjoy it more now than they did when it came out.
Right, you know, it was never adapted into a game because it was a flop. I mean, I think that's the reason that was cited, you know, that, you know, it never was able, it didn't make back the money production-wise, but if this was a Final Fantasy game, like, it had, you know, like, ATB and summons and an airship that you could pilot around the map, I mean, I couldn't help but wonder if that story had been in a Final Fantasy game, if people would have eaten it up.
And did you talk a little bit about the Aki Ross role at all?
No, but I mean, she is just one of the coolest Final Fantasy heroines ever.
Well, and something that to me was really interesting is, you know, she was actually rendered with more polygons than any other character in the movie, because they were trying to make her be like a you know, AI supermodel, basically. You know, not that she would have had a real artificial intelligence, but they wanted her to be a computer-generated supermodel that would do, like, various ads for other companies, do photo shoots for magazines, and, in fact, I think Maxim or someone did run an Aki Ross issue where she was their pull-out centerfold, and I remember that very distinctly because I bought that magazine and had a picture of her on my wall for many years.
That's funny. You know, and the interesting thing is that a lot of people felt that she was super Uncanny Valley, but I never felt that. I always thought that Square Enix has probably made the most realistic-looking CG characters without reaching Uncanny Valley.
I felt that that was true, but for a lot of people, I understand that she actually was fairly Uncanny Valley. So, you know, I certainly can't really speak to people who, you know, maybe don't watch anime like I do as much, or weren't playing games with, you know, awful CGI at the time. So, you know, maybe the threshold for that was much lower. I thought she looked great. I would have loved to have seen this entire thing take off. You know, they sort of wanted her to be similar to that film Shimon, which was about a virtual reality movie star or something.
Yeah, Sim 1.
Yeah, so, you know, very similar to that. They wanted to make this character be used and so they could license her out for various ad campaigns or what have you. And this was supposed to be her, like, starting role, and that she would later appear in other games and other movies. And so really, in a way, very forward-thinking from Square Enix, or I'm sorry, just Squaresoft at the time.
Yeah, you know, kind of some interesting side notes for Spirits Within that it actually caused a delay in the Square Enix merger, which had been planned since at least the year before that. So, because of the failure of the movie, and, but also that, art director from BioWare, his name is Derek Watts, he once cited the Spirits Within as a major influence for him on, Mass Effect. So that's kind of awesome.
Indeed. And, you know, this movie was, while it was received negatively by gamers, it actually got a mixed to positive reception from film critics.
And, you know, one of the things was that there was, like, a Time article that kind of was, like, doubting its ability to be profitable because of the unsteady track record of video game movies. So that's kind of unfair that that had kind of that stigma out there.
But, you know, Time magazine, and this is a direct quote, "If the ambitious mix of East-West movie, game, and anime action doesn't pay off, we may still remember this as the moment that CG actors were born," which really ties into Square's goals with, again, the Aki Ross character. We had Roger Ebert advocating for the film, giving it 3.5 stars out of 4, calling it a technical milestone. And he very specifically stated that he wanted to see more films like this get made, but he was worried that audiences weren't going to be able to connect to the film, which ultimately was a very accurate perception of the circumstance.
I mean, you think of things like Avatar, and you can't help but, you know, have to acknowledge that something like Spirits Within really paved the way for something like Avatar to be possible. Just even just showing it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess you could call me a Spirits Within apologist. I thought that film was fantastic, and I feel like people now would appreciate it a lot more than people did when it came out.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Talking about video game movies that are well received by video game playing audiences, let's talk about Paul Anderson's Resident Evil.
Yeah, this was kind of his next big video game movie, wasn't it? Because he had turned down the opportunity to direct Mortal Kombat Annihilation, because I think he just didn't want to be involved with it at that point. And then when they were doing the third Mortal Kombat movie, he was in the middle of Resident Evil. So this was his next big video game movie. And, you know, kind of notable because it's kind of like a side story to the Resident Evil games, almost.
I also want to point out that Paul Anderson met his future wife, Mila Jovovich, on this film.
Oh, right. She was Alice.
She was. She was the main character of this film. And, you know, they're now on, what, like the 6th Resident Evil film? And she is still the main character in those things. They still do them together.
Yeah, that's kind of cool because, you know, it's really, in its own way, the Resident Evil films have kind of developed their own side narrative, you know?
Yeah, well, while initially, this first film, as you said, was very much a side story to the first Resident Evil, it sort of takes place at the mansion, but, like, it seems to start before the first game happens, but end during the second game with Raccoon City and everything.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they went off on their own crazy tangent, adapting elements from, you know, Resident Evil 3 and Resident Evil Code Veronica and... bringing in characters from the game series, while initially it was all original characters, especially in this first one.
Right.
They have since then brought in characters from the games.
That's what I was just going to say. So it's kind of interesting how it started out trying to be its own interpretation, but really kind of started to meld it with the elements of the game series.
And, you know, that score was done in part by Marilyn Manson for that first film.
That's right.
It's just this really strange experimental little film in its way. And I actually think, you know, it's not like an effective horror film in the way of like The Conjuring being actually creepy and scary, but it's, you know, a horror action sci-fi film that's successful in being fun to watch. I would overall actually call it a pretty alright movie, that first one.
Yeah, and it's had, 4 sequels so far, correct?
Yeah, I believe they're doing the sixth movie now.
And, I mean, like we said, they're still being made. So, I mean, that's more than you could say about some other video game movie. So that about does it for our classics, doesn't it? Because it's time to talk some shit about some shit, isn't it?
It sure is. The first movie I want to talk here was, as far as I know, the first video game movie by Uwe Boll. This was, of course, House of the Dead. It was a 2003 action comedy horror film. And this movie, and there's no polite way to put it, was a fucking shit show.
It was some bullshit.
I'm sorry?
It was some bullshit.
Are you trying to make, like, a pun with Uwe Boll's name?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I seem to recall, for example, that there was a sequence in the game that was just, in the movie that was just clips of the game.
What?
The story was effing stupid and nonsensical. The makeup and effects were effing ridiculous. But, you know, ultimately, the movie made more money than they spent making it.
Yeah. And then, 5 years later, he put out the director's cut called The Funny Version.
Yeah, I literally cannot even. Oh, apparently that one has more video game footage. Fun!
And then he followed it up, I mean, I believe this was his next one, with Alone in the Dark, which some of you pointed out to us, starred the lovely Tara Reid.
As a scientist.
My favorite role of Tara Reid's is in Josie and the Pussycats.
Well,
that's probably the only good thing she's done.
Well, you know, again, she was in Sharknado.
Christian Slater was in this movie.
Yes, he was. Now, Alone in the Dark, I mean, it's bad. Please make no mistake. It's not a good movie. But it's better than House of the Dead. It's probably better than Mario Brothers. Like, it's funny. Like, the thing is, watching it is effing hilarious. It's not meant to be a comedy film like House of the Dead is, but it is much funnier than House of the Dead.
But it was nominated for some Razzies and some Stinkers, which I didn't even know Stinkers were a thing. They might have had to make it just for Uwe Boll.
It won several of those things. The thing is, it's unintentionally effing hilarious. Like, it is a very bad film. I am surprised that this movie hasn't gotten the Mystery Science Theater or similar treatment.
Right.
I don't actually have a whole lot to say about that, do you?
Nope.
Then let's talk about Blood Rain.
Lesbian vampires?
This was also a Uwe Boll film, and yes, you might be familiar with it as Lesbian Vampires. This movie lost a tremendous amount of money. It was created, its production budget was about $25 million, and it made about $3 million.
Ooh.
It was absolutely awful. You know, apparently, instead of hiring, like, actors, Uwe Boll hired prostitutes for one scene to act in the film. It is just absolutely terrible. It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I do know that it actually got some fairly okay reviews at the time, with a lot of people saying, like, oh, for a game adaptation, it's not that bad. But, you know, as a connoisseur of game adaptations, it's pretty fucking bad.
Yeah. Was there as much lesbianism in it, or?
I don't remember there being a lot of lesbianism. I do remember it was notable that Ben Kingsley was in it. But I seem to recall that his reasoning was basically what other opportunity was he going to get to play a vampire king.
Yeah. Meatloaf played a vampire in that movie.
Yeah, in fact, Meatloaf was in the scene with the prostitutes.
Ah, of course, to him, it's probably just like a throwback to Rocky Horror.
Are you saying Rocky Horror is full of prostitutes?
And other spooky things.
That is just awful. Let's talk about Postal.
Do we have to?
So, this is another Uwe Boll film.
It stars Vern Troyer.
Right? You know, Zach Ward, Dave Foley, so at least some people that, like, whose names you might be familiar with. And, you know, this movie, was made, it's not really super based on the game very much. Uwe Boll basically just made, like, a super over-the-top, like, social commentary, like, a low-budget South Park movie that's very, very loosely based on Postal.
That sounds like...
And, you know, because of the political content, a lot of theater owners at the time actually were boycotting this movie for being so offensive. It made, like, 9/11 jokes and stuff. Osama bin Laden was, like, a part of the story. A lot of people saw this as very, very, very offensive. And I'm gonna say, of all of the Uwe Boll video game movies, to me, this one is the most interesting. Not because it's good, because Lord knows it ain't. Not because it's funny, because Lord knows it ain't. But it is something very strange that I don't know who else could have made.
Yeah, I mean, but the interesting thing is that you look at these controversial aspects, and then you had Matt Stone and Trey Parker tackling, like you said, the South Park comparison is apt. I mean, you know, Satan Satan's lover was Saddam Hussein in Bigger, Longer, Uncut. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting that, I guess South Park always gets flack for its shit too, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to contrast it directly to South Park like that, certainly it has faced a lot of the same pushback that South Park has received. It's certainly not nearly as intelligent as South Park sometimes is.
Yeah.
But, again, this was a very interesting creative direction to take a video game movie in, and as such, for me, this is kind of the only OA Ball film that I'd really say, like, oh, that's probably worth seeing.
All right, so you wouldn't say that about In the Name of the King, a dungeon siege tale. Okay, so I have to ask, is the Dungeon Siege movie worth it on mute to watch Jason Statham?
Okay, I have a huge boner for Jason Statham. He's, like, kind of my favorite. Because, you know, he's like a balding, scruffy guy that's fucking, like, over the top as shit in basically every movie he's in. I love it. I love Jason Statham. So, to me, it's worth watching for that. You know, Burt Reynolds was in it. John Rhys-Davies, Ron Perlman, Matthew Lillard, Ray Liotta. Like, all of these people who are in a lot of awful B-movies are in this movie.
Matthew Lillard was in the Wing Commander movie, I noticed.
Yes, he was.
And the Scooby-Doo movie, which is not a video game movie, but also a mess.
And this Dungeon Siege movie, again, is awful, but hilarious. It seemed almost like, because, you know, it was split over two movies, the story is. And it really seemed like Yoey Bol was trying to use the Dungeon Siege license to try and make, like, a Lord of the Rings movie, basically. And it's an absolute mess. But, again, I actually, and I guess, you know, in part it needs to be said, I do like watching bad movies. This is a bad movie, but it is a fun-to-watch bad movie.
And, you know, there was apparently supposed to be a third one out next year, but I guess that ended up not happening. It was going to star Dominic Purcell, who was the other stud from Prison Break.
Well, my understanding is that that was supposed to come out in December, and that it's been filmed, it just got delayed.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the Doom films now. Doom, 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 doom. Doomy, doom, doom, doomy, doomy, doom, doom. So it starred The Rock. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it had a first-person shooter sequence where it was, like, the camera with a gun, like, in the bottom center of the screen, like, Doom style. This movie tried to appeal to all audiences by just being, like, a sci-fi action movie. They didn't really sell it super hard on being, like, a video game movie, but it was. And, you know, it wasn't awful. This movie had a fairly large production budget, which it did make back and then some. And I seem to recall, you know, it mostly got bad reviews from critics, but not as bad as most video game movies. You know, whereas most video game movies got mostly negative reviews, this just got a lot of negative reviews.
Yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of fans were upset that the movie did not follow the plot of the game, because, you know, the games are literally about an invasion from hell. In this movie, they turned it into, like, a virus that was turning people into demons. So, yeah, it's not super good. There isn't a ton of, like, action shooting scenes. And, like, this is a Doom movie. Like, 99% of Doom was shooting things.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, you know, this is sort of closer in tone or in reception or in execution to, like, the Street Fighter movie, where they took the basic ideas of the game and took it in a more conventional film direction that maybe didn't work.
Yeah. So we done with all that bullshit now?
Well, Doom wasn't a new
wave.
No,
I know,
film.
I know.
I actually want to talk about this last one because it's a movie I actually like as a movie. And not only because I really like Timothy Oliphant.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm talking about Hitman, which again is based, you know, on the Hitman games and it follows the plot of the first game to some degree. It's more of taking the premise and then building on it, but in a way that was at least fitting with the game's tropes rather than trying to just apply like, oh, here is a generic action movie on top of your idea. And something that's really interesting here is that the budget for this film was $24 million, and it ended up making more than $100 million. So, like, taking into account, like, home DVD releases and what have you, like, this was actually a fairly profitable film for, I think this was Screen Gems that... Oh, no, I'm sorry. For 20th Century Fox and Europa Corp, this is actually a successful film.
Yeah.
It received a similar reception to Doom from critics, but again, you know, a lot of fans were into it. It was very violent, appropriately so, and, you know, it actually tried to be like a legitimate movie while being true to the game.
Mm-hmm.
In a manner not entirely dissimilar from the, like, Dead or Alive movie, which we're going to be talking about in a minute.
Indeed.
Slaggy, do you have anything to say about this?
No, I think it's time to move it along.
Moving on, along. All right, let's talk then about sort of the rebirth of big-budget video game movies. And, you know, we only have four movies to talk about here, and let's start pacing this up because we're already at the two-hour mark.
Yeah, let's do that.
So let's talk first about one I know that you've seen, the Prince of Persia movie.
Yeah, you know, that's notable because Disney was involved with it. They kind of wanted to get their feet wet in video game adaptations. It starred our favorite goofy Jake Gyllenhaal, which was kind of a different role for him. And it wasn't bad. I mean, it was, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. It was Disney trying to turn Prince of Persia into basically, like, another National Treasure sort of franchise. And it was fun. I mean, there was a scene with Jake Gyllenhaal wrestling shirtless.
The movie opens with Jake Gyllenhaal shirtless mud wrestling.
Yeah. You know, that said, it seemed to be pretty faithful to the themes of the games. And, you know, it wasn't bad. But again, kind of almost a return to this way of making it appealing to a larger audience.
Yeah. You know, and this movie was successful to some degree. It had a lot of merchandising spinoff. You know, a lot of these movies did not do a lot of merchandising. We didn't see a lot of, like, licensed toys or what have
Disney.
You.
Disney, of course they didn't merchandising.
But this one had, like, action figures. It had Lego sets. Hell, I'm half surprised that they didn't have a Lego the Game for Prince of Persia. I would have loved how reductive that would have been.
The
thing that I really liked was that, you know, and admittedly they took it in its own movie direction, but it stayed pretty close to the spirit of the story of the
games. I think it did, yeah.
There was, you know, the Dagger of Time and all that. And
lots of acrobatics.
Yeah, so I was into it. I actually enjoyed it. I've seen it a few times, in fact, and every time I watch it, it's like, okay, that wasn't amazing, but it was fun.
You just keep going back to the mud wrestling scene?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. If this was Gay Buoy, we'd be talking about, like, today on Gay Buoy, we're talking about Jake Gyllenhaal. Now, for Prince of Persia, he really bulked out for this role.
Well, he did, actually. He put in a tremendous amount of, like, physical training to get, like, ripped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else to say about Prince of Persia?
You know, I really, really don't. So let's talk next about Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
Which I really feel was the Final Fantasy movie that every fanboy and girl was waiting for. You know, I have to say, as someone who's not the biggest fan of Final Fantasy VII, it's not a bad movie.
And, you know, I'm going to make an addendum here. I want to talk, while we talk, let's talk, instead of talking about Advent Children, let's talk about Advent Children Complete.
Right, because I know that you preferred that due to, you know, like, total, there were some, like, new sequences added and such that really fleshed out the story.
Yeah, I felt that Advent Children, as released, was a bit of a mess. I thought the story was really half-baked. You know, I've talked here on the show about how I'm not a huge lover of Final Fantasy VII, even in the best of circumstances. So, I watched Advent Children for the first time, and I wasn't really into it, like, at all. I thought it was just a mess. I thought, like, oh, it had a few pretty scenes, but overall, as, like, a story, like, man, what a waste of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever. But Advent Children Complete, which I only really gave a chance because the Japanese release, Blu-ray, came with the first demo of Final Fantasy XIII. So I watched...
That's right.
So I imported that, and I watched Advent Children Complete, and they'd added a lot of sequences that really fleshed out the story and made the story make sense. And it went from being like, oh, this is like a really shitty movie, to, oh, this is like a sequel to Final Fantasy VII, and it makes sense. Like, I like Complete a lot. So, you know, it's obviously, initially, this wasn't even going to be a full movie. It was just going to be, like, a 30-minute, like, direct-to-video little short film to watch as, like, oh, this is, it's like a brief reunion with your favorite Final Fantasy characters.
Right, and similar to the Last Order OVA that Madhouse Studios animated.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really talking about some OVAs here, but... And, you know, funny enough, with Last Order, because Last Order was produced as a bonus for the original Advent Children release. And it, funny enough, you know, that actually, the Last Order is no longer available on with Advent Children Complete, because it actually goes against the continuity of the Final Fantasy VII games.
Oh, huh.
So, But, you know, ultimately, I guess they were making this short film. They were going to show it at film festivals and stuff. And as they were making it, I guess they started to have more and more ideas of what they wanted to do with it. And it became this bigger project as, you know, to have its own story to sort of cap the ending of Final Fantasy VII, which we won't talk about here because spoiler buoy.
Spoilerbuoy.org.
But, yeah, you know, this, ultimately, it was successful. It had, you know, songs done for it by My Chemical Romance singer Gerard Way. It was, like, a big deal. It was pretty successful. Mm-hmm. And while the original version didn't review super well, Advent Children Complete did review fairly well.
Yeah, didn't Gax do the Japanese songs for it? No? Oh, no, I'm thinking of when he did Dirge of Cerberus theme song.
Yep.
The one good thing about Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah, he also had a voice acting role in the Japanese
version.
That's
what it was. As one of, like, the...
Well, he had a voice... Spoiler. He had a voice acting role in Dirge of Cerberus as well, and that character, Genesis, also appears in...
Advent Children.
No, he doesn't appear in Advent Children.
Oh, he doesn't?
He appears in the PSP one. Crisis Core.
Crisis Core.
Yes. Yeah, no, Gackt is not connected to Advent Children at all.
Oh, well, yeah. All right, so can we talk about DOA Dead or Alive, please?
Yes. Talk about it, Slagkick.
I kind of live for DOA. Like, the thing about Dead or Alive, the movie, is that it's super campy. But, I mean, the thing is, Dead or Alive is super campy, so I think it's probably the most successful video game adaptation that I've ever seen, because straight up to the point of where, oh, we're going to inject nanobots in you to track your stats, and then you see, like, them watching it on screens, there's, like, little UI elements
bars.
With health bars, there is a Dead or Alive beach volleyball scene. The thing is that similar to a movie like one of the Charlie Angels movies that was out in the early 2000s, it's tongue-in-cheek, it knows what it's trying to be, and doesn't take itself too seriously.
And, you know, the funny thing to me about this Dead or Alive movie, and it plays basically like a, you know, like a kung fu film, but it was directed by Corey Yen, who does kung fu films, including my actual personal favorite kung fu film, Ninja in the Dragon's Den, from the early 80s. You know, he also made, like, The Transporter with Jason Statham. So, like, they actually got someone who can make this kind of movie to make Dead or Alive, and it absolutely pays great homage to the game series. You know, as Slagkick was saying, it doesn't take itself super seriously, but a Dead or Alive movie shouldn't. It has a spontaneous beach volleyball scene in the middle of the movie, and, like, the scene is being commentated by Zach.
Yeah,
which is, again, in Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, Zach is the announcer for the games there, so it was just really authentic in a lot of little detailed ways. So even though it's a B film, I mean, Dead or Alive, the game is a like the video game equivalent of a B film, so that really works.
It's so fun. I mean, you know, the whole thing about Dead or Alive is like, oh, all the babical babes, and I mean, I feel like the movie really plays with that. And, you know, like, there's, like, little, lesbian hints that, you know, in some ways could be really gross and smarmy, but, I mean, I think it was still at least really true to the Dead or Alive franchise, and, you know, just, like, the acting, even, like, someone like Jamie Presley playing Tina Armstrong was, like, a riot in that role. Devin Aoki was Kasumi. You know, she was kind of a big deal, back in that era. She was involved in a lot of movies. I mean, she hasn't really done a lot.
Basically, any action movie that needed, like, a badass lady ninja, she was the one.
Yeah. And, Junkie XL did the movie, the music for that.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... Again, they really just took the plot of the game and made a movie out of it. Like, they didn't really do a lot of, like, adaptation. Like, no, it's a Dead or Alive movie.
Yeah, and it actually works in its own wacky way. Like, this is the type of movie that I could put on, you know, after a party, you know, just winding down with some friends and having a laugh. And, I mean, it's just, I think in that way, it's probably the most successful because it kind of marries the, you know, the idea of, you know, being kind of campy and over the top with actually being really faithful. And it's like, it feels like a video game. It feels like you're watching a video game, a Dead or Alive game.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, for people who love the Dead or Alive games, you know, there are so many homages in terms of using camera angles, people getting, like, knocked off of balconies, like, things that are very specific to the Dead or Alive franchise that make it unique from other fighting games that are absolutely represented in this movie. It's really, again... It's unlikely to say the least, but to me, Dead or Alive is, to date, the most successful adaptation of a video game to the movie format.
Yeah, I think it hits on all the right points, really.
Indeed. You know, I could actually just talk about the Dead or Alive movie all damn day, but we have one more movie that's already out that we wanted to talk to before talking about the future a little bit.
Oh, that's right.
So let's talk about the Mark Wahlberg and Mila Kunis masterpiece, Max Payne.
Well, those are two of my favorite people. Maybe not a favorite, but I mean, I like Mark Wahlberg. And of course, we are talking about Marky Mark Wahlberg, not the other Mark Wahlberg.
There's a different Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, he's like a TV show host. He's kind of like Vanessa L. Williams. He's actually Mark L. Wahlberg.
I had no idea.
There might be a Captain L Spike out there who's like the lesser version.
Oh, hell no.
Why don't you tell us about Max Payne?
Were you here the time I tried to watch Max Payne?
I don't remember.
I once tried to watch Max Payne. I got maybe 15 minutes in, and I had to shut that shit off. And, you know, I say that. I love bad movies. I don't normally, like, I can think of very few movies that I have ever stopped watching mid-movie. Even, like, Battlefield Earth. Like, no, I watched that entire thing start to finish in the theater. My friends that I were with wanted to walk out, and I was so offended. Like, no, you can't just not watch a movie once you've started. Max Payne, I could not get through.
Which is disappointing, because Mark Wahlberg is great, Mila Kunis is great, and Nelly Furtado had a role in it.
As did Ludacris.
Yeah.
But it is just a complete mess. It is, again, I would have to say this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I would rather watch Mystery Science Theater movies without the Mystery Science Theater-ness than watch this shit. And, you know, I'm not talking about something like, you know, Manos, but, you know, something like Hobgoblins. I'd watch that over this. Like, this some shit.
Pod People.
Oh, I love Pod People. I mean, it's awful, but...
He's the best.
Anyway, yeah, I mean... I feel awful because I don't have much to say about Max Payne other than it was awful and it shouldn't have been because it had a great cast. Chris O'Donnell was in it too. I've had a crush on that guy since like Batman Forever.
Right? With the nipple outfit.
There wasn't a nipple outfit in Batman Forever. You're thinking of Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Learn to movie.
Well, I bet you wanted to see nipples on that outfit.
Well, of course.
And out of that outfit.
Of course!
Alright, so should we talk about the future of video game movies? I'm excited to announce that I will be debuting my feature film adaptation of Paperboy. The funny thing is, though, that I've always wanted to make a feature film adaptation of Paperboy. But, in all seriousness, we've got a slate of game movies coming up soon. GameMovies.org. Need for Speed was one that we talked about not too long ago, with the, or did we talk about it? I think I had wanted to talk about it, but we, back up. I don't think we talked about it. So you might have heard a while back, not too long ago, about the Need for Speed movie being announced with the sexy, sexy Aaron Paul of, Breaking Bad fame.
Yeah, and that's actually just about to come out.
That seems like it'll be fun. I like the Need for Speed games. You know, Aaron Paul's probably got some shirtless scenes. It should probably be a good fun, you know, go get some pretzel bites, some cookie dough bites, Big Coke, bag of popcorn.
Your movie-going experience is more about what you're eating than what you're seeing.
An icy...
Girl.
Maybe some dibs. But in all seriousness, I'm just saying it would seem like it would be fun to go out to the movies. You know, it's probably going to be a little mindless, but...
Probably. You know what else we have coming out later this year?
Heavenly Sword.
Is Heavenly Sword. And, you know, I laugh because I feel like it can't possibly be good, but, you know, benefit of the doubt, you know, maybe it'll be alright.
I'm just laughing because of those launch era PS3 graphics.
You know, at the time, it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Although it is funny now to look at in that context, because it doesn't look very good anymore. You know, I also wanted to talk, just to briefly mention, you know, there's an Assassin's Creed movie coming up,
yeah,
supposedly
finally,
in the next couple years.
Finally confirmed. You know, Michael Fassbender, is going to be involved in it. He's
awesome.
Producing it, too. Yeah.
He fine.
And now, do we have confirmation that it's going to be the Desmond story?
I don't think we do. I think a lot of people are speculating that based on casting choices, but I don't think we have that confirmed.
I would be fine if it was just the Ezio story, just because I love Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah, right? Let's see, announced at the same time as Heavenly Sword, we should also in the next year or so have a Ratchet and Clank movie.
Yeah, now that one should be some good fun. Really cute and... have a wide appeal. So those Ratchet and Clank games are good fun.
Yeah, they are. And you know, then last in this sort of looking forward bit, I also wanted to point out that we mentioned earlier that Sam Raimi was in theory going to be making a Warcraft movie once upon a time, but ultimately that fell through. Currently, the project is in the hands of David Bowie's son, Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
He is a phenomenal filmmaker. His feature, Moon, is one of my all-time favorite films. And they've already done shooting for the Warcraft film, including with Rob Krasinski, who is, you might remember from Pacific Rim. So, you know, it looks like this Warcraft movie is actually going to get made. I believe they're aiming for a 2016 release.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is going to get made. And honestly, I have a lot of faith in Duncan Jones. I believe this is going to be a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, those are the video game movies that we're looking forward to in the next few years. Hashtag GameBuoy Extra, tweet or email us with any video game movies you're looking forward to in the future. Feel free to tweet us at GameBuoy.
At GameBuoy.
.org.
DOTORG.
Exactly so. You can also email us at MailBuoy at GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy at GameBuoy.org.
And, you know, if we missed any future video game movies that you're excited for, we'd love to hear it. Hashtag GameBuoy Extra.
Hashtag GameBuoy Extra.
And, you know, also feel free to email us if we missed a particular favorite or hated movie that you really wanted us to talk about that we didn't get to. You know, obviously we only really wanted to focus on movies here that one of the two of us had seen. And, you know, between the two of us, we've seen, you know, these 20 or so films we talked about today. But, you know, I'm sure there are others that we haven't seen. So please, by all means, reach out, and we will read your segment during our social links next week. In the meantime, I wanted to also just briefly mention there have been quite a few anime movies based on video games, most of them extremely accurate, successful recreations of video game stories. Unlike a lot of these live-action movies we've been talking about today, typically, I feel like the anime style of adapting video games is just to tell the storyline of the game as an anime movie. You know, I'm looking at things like Persona 3, Bayonetta, Sakura Taisen, Fatal Fury, Samurai Spirit / Showdown, and Voltage Fighter Gaukaiser. And I also wanted to make a special note that, BioWare has worked with Japanese anime studios to make anime side stories based in the Mass Effect and Dragon Age universes. We've talked about those here on the show before over the last couple years. I actually thought they were both pretty alright as a fan of the game that liked the characters the anime were focusing on. I feel like if I didn't like those characters, in the case of the Mass Effect anime, it's James Vega, whom I love.
Yum.
Ew, what was that? So, you know, your mileage may vary based on how you feel about those things, but overall, I dug it. And so if you're looking for video game adaptations, the new Bayonetta anime, for example, was superb, great retelling of the story from the first Bayonetta game. Absolutely, if you're looking for video game adaptations, check out anime. You might find something you really like. Slaggy, I know that you really wanted to talk about two or three movies that just had video games as a main plot element.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but we couldn't talk about video games and movies without at least mentioning The Wizard, which had Fred Savage and a young Jenny Lewis.
Ah, she's my favorite!
Right? Who is of Rilo Kiley and, you know, her own successful solo career, fame. You might remember this for quotes such as, "I love the Power Glove, it's so bad." And when Jenny Lewis, I don't remember what the plot device was, but she tried to say that an old guy grabbed her boobs. But as a gamer, the most notable part of The Wizard was that it was the first introduction of Super Mario Bros. 3 to Western audiences. Because it had a clip of, you know, the whole premise is that Fred Savage plays this kid who helps his autistic brother, like, travel across the country with the help of Jenny Lewis to go to this games tournament in Universal Studios. And it's a pretty terrible movie overall. It's very advergaming in a lot of ways. Like, sell the Power Glove, Universal Studios, and Super Mario Bros. 3. But that said, I remember, like, they show you, like, oh, he's using the warp whistle. And, you know, like, going in and getting the warp whistle in the World 1 mini dungeon. You know, so, I mean, I fondly remember that part of it. And then I think the other thing is we can't mention video games and movies without talking about Tron and Tron Legacy, because, you know, those definitely have video games as part of the, you know, culture of its game, Flynn's Arcade, and all of that. So, you know, I like both Trons. Original Tron's a little cheesy. Tron Legacy is actually, I really legit love it as a film. Other than that, you know, there hasn't been a lot of video games really focused about gaming culture. There was that one starring Gerard Butler where he was actually, what was it called?
Gamer,
right, where he was controlled as like a FPS, and that's a really interesting concept. I haven't seen it yet, but
yeah.
Gerard Butler.
And, you know, obviously we're not talking about, you know, movies about the game culture, like, you know, Indie Game the Movie or The King of Kong, Handful of Quarters.
Right, documentaries.
Yeah, so I think that'll about do it for this conversation, as, you know, poorly researched and opinionated as it was. That having been said, I'm very excited about next week's discussion topic. So let's finish out this episode so that we can get to giving our listeners a teaser.
Indeed. Ooh. Teaser trailer.
Smash or smash. We have here two remarkable articles. The first comes from Jeremy Parrish's personal site, twodimensions.com. This is called "The Death of Mega Man Was Probably the Best Thing That Could Have Happened to Mega Man."
Right?
And this is, you know, it's basically an article about how, you know, Capcom was really abusing Mega Man as a franchise. We were getting multiple releases across various series of varying quality, and basically people burnt out. You had games like Mega Man ZX Advent hitting that was a really well-put-together, well-designed, very fun, cool-ass game. It's basically Mega Man X reimagined as a Metroidvania, and, like, nobody bought it because there was so much fatigue for this franchise. And, you know, they were busy spitting out, you know, bullshit like Mega Man Star Force and Mega Man Battle Network. And, you know, it's like, we didn't need all that. And you're putting out all these things that are killing interest in the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And now Mega Man is basically dead. But we have Keiji Inafune with Concept and Integreates doing Azure Striker Gunvolt. We have Mighty No. 9 coming.
And I'm just like, F yeah, Inafune-san, reclaim your shit.
Right? Like, we basically have new and improved versions of these series coming now that people want. Like, clearly there's a real thirst for this game, and Capcom was just so busy making child toy spin-off merchandising vehicles that they really abused the Mega Man brand franchise into the ground, to the point that even people who like this stuff couldn't get into it. So,
yeah,
it's a great article, and I had thought about some of these things, and I've even talked about them to some degree here on the show, but it was really interesting to see someone state it in such a succinct way.
Yeah, I mean, Parrish is really good at taking a look at these, especially with a retro bent, as he is often wont to do.
Yeah.
Over on Polygon, we've got another smash called...
Two smashes, ow!
Called The Final Years of Irrational Games, according to those who were there. Just a really good, in-depth look at kind of, you know, as Irrational is transitioning into a totally different focus, as we said. Just a really good, well-researched article about it. You know, talks about Levine, a lot about the development of Infinite and kind of some of the struggles they had with it. And, I mean, it just really, for those who are kind of want a little more of an answer about why Irrational has chosen to go down this route, and, well, really, Ken Levine has chosen to go this route, it really answers a lot of questions, I think. And it's just, I mean, in terms of the purpose of Smash or Trash, really like what we like to see in games journalism, just an in-depth look, you know, not clickbaity, not just trying to be sensational.
Just a great investigative piece.
Indeed.
All right. Well, with that having been said, it's time for...
I say hey. what's going on?
What you playing? Oh my God, what you playing?
So I want to talk about three things real quick, and I'm going to try to keep it very fast. I'm going to talk about the Titanfall beta, I'm going to talk about Bravely Default, and I'm going to talk about the Oculus Rift. So Titanfall beta is good. It is definitely the best first-person shooter I've ever played. That is not my genre. I burnt out on it on GoldenEye after putting several hundred hours in on GoldenEye along with my buddy Seawolf Jason and Space Pirate Ben, both of whom have been here on the show before. We spent entire summers doing nothing but GoldenEye, you know, often for 10, 11 hour stretches per day. So I really got out of first-person shooters after that point, only occasionally having a dalliance with Halo, because for whatever reason, I really like the art aesthetic of Halo. I've talked about that here on the show before, especially with the more recent iterations, as they've gotten more and more fantastically sci-fi. So it was really interesting, because I played Titanfall. I've been kind of interested in it, because it introduces new mechanics to this style of game that you never see. You know, the double jumping and wall running and obviously mech piloting.
Yeah.
It's a completely different experience from any other first-person shooter, and the freedom of movement, because you have a really fast running speed, you jump super high because of your double jumps, and running on walls, and doing awesome, like, parkour, like, bouncing between two walls to scale buildings. It is just completely different from any first-person shooter I've ever played, and I ended up in that beta sinking, like, 15 hours in over one weekend.
That's great.
So I'm really stoked for this game. I know that a lot of people are put off by just first-person shooters in general, and that's cool.
That leads me to a question. It's not that I don't like first-person shooters, it's just typically something where my skill set has not matched well with it. That said, do you think that Titanfall would be a great opportunity for me to try and explore this genre a little more?
Honestly, yes, with the caveat that a lot of the concessions that Titanfall makes to be accessible to non-first-person shooter audiences is making the Call of Duty crowd very unhappy, because it won't be conducive to, like, a super hardcore FPS experience. For me, that's a good thing. I'm sorry to see any community get hamstrung like that, but at the same time, I can't ignore the fact that I'll be fucked if I'm gonna play Call of Duty for more than an hour ever. But I, again, over the course of a weekend, put in like 15 hours on Titanfall.
Excellent. Well, that just sold me a copy then.
So, again, it's not what you're expecting. It's not like any other first-person shooter. And if, you know, if you're interested in the idea of interesting environmental exploration and, like, having to outwit your opponent, because it's not just about, like, oh, I got behind you and capped you in the back of the head. This
no,
is the kind of game for
you.
That. This
can you,
is.
Can you teabag mech other mechs, though?
No, you can't. This is a lot more about, like, positioning and being aware of your environment and learning to scale walls and shit with your multi-jumps. It is a very different experience. It is not like a traditional first-person shooter.
That's great.
I want to talk about Bravely Default, which is JRPG perfection. This is probably my new all-time favorite JRPG, probably even over Final Fantasy VI.
Wow.
I can't talk about why for super spoilery reasons, but I was into every inch of the plot. I loved the way that the game resolved. And obviously, it's a game highly focused around job system as its main mechanic. So I was hook, line, and sinker on every level. Incredible music, the graphics are lovely. Absolutely, I cannot wait for Bravely Second. And last but not least, I got an Oculus Rift. I mentioned that earlier. I played with it a bit, and I have to say everything you've heard is true. It is absolutely a game changer, and as soon as this technology comes down enough in price that people can easily buy one, I think it's going to change what people want video games to be. Slaggy, what do you have to talk about?
I'm going to talk about a few things really quickly and then focus in on two main titles. So, one thing that I tried to play recently was Assassin's Creed 4, and I found myself getting a little frustrated with it. I kind of might be over the Assassin's Creed deal. Like,
Interesting.
You know, the thing is that I recognize that it's not broken in the way that 3 was, but in a lot of ways, I find myself being frustrated as a gamer. The thing I liked about games like Assassin's Creed 2 in that trilogy was that there was a lot of freedom to kind of do what you want and, you know,
do what you want with my body.
And I feel kind of shoehorned into the story with 3, still feel that a little with 4. And also, like, technically it still feels a little glitchy to me. Like, the engine just feels like it's not, especially running on the current gen consoles, it just feels like they could be doing a lot more.
What platform are you playing that
on? I'm playing on Xbox One.
Okay.
But I mean, it's more just the engine itself. That, you know, I'm just kind of like, you know, it worked really well. They had it running really well for the 2 trilogy, but I'm just not really having that good of a time with it. I'd rather pop in something like Tomb Raider, which lets me explore and do action-y, adventure-y, climb-y, explore-y things, you know? And like, I think one of the things that I actually struggle with in 4 and that I also struggled with 3 is that in the combat, like, it shouldn't be a combat game, but felt like I was forced in 3 and still in 4 into these situations where I've got to do, like, melee combat, which only really in an assassination game should be a last resort thing. I mean, part of the appeal to me for the Assassin's Creed games was how can I hide and be undetected and make my leap of faith from the building to assassinate you. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of a little bit lukewarm. I'll still probably pick up the PS4 Eveline chapter that you can get now as a standalone. But I'm just not really sold on it. And I don't know if I really bother to finish it. It's just like there's other things I'd rather be playing. I put a little bit of time into Pokemon X. I had received it as a gift. And since, you know, I talked about on the Pokemon episode about how I used to like to double dip, in some cases quadruple dip, in the case of Pokemon Crystal, or maybe that was a triple dip, but anyway, you know, I went ahead and it's a cartridge of it, so, you know, I have the download of Y, but now I have a cartridge of X, and I was able to get in on that free Celebi action, so I ended up just picking a Chespin because I don't plan really on using it, which is kind of a first. I always have a tradition of, like, keeping the starter Pokemon in my party, but I'm like, bitch, I got a Celebi. That's gonna be my grass type, sorry. So, I've got that. I've got a Charmander. I'm excited to make him a Mega Charizard X. But, unfortunately, I kind of had to put a backseat to Pokemon X, which, I mean, is okay, because I've already played Y. Because I picked up Bravely Default, and I just have to say, we're probably going to have a Game Buoy spotlight on Bravely Default after I finish it, because it's just...
Fuck yeah.
It's just so well done.
We'd be remiss not to mention, by the way, that our friends over at Koopa Club recorded a Bravely Default spotlight this weekend, and I expect, given their timelines, they'll probably have that up in the next few days.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're finished, you want to hear some quality discussion about Bravely Default, go check them out.
I believe they're going super spoilery. For ours, we'll probably do first half non-spoiler, second half super spoiler.
Yeah, I anticipate that as well. But
anyway,
you know, I love
continue.
The drop system. Like you said, I really love the Brave and Default aspect of it, choosing whether I want to, you know, double up my actions or save them and get a little defensive. It seems like such a minor mechanic, but it really changes the flow of the
It really does.
Of the gameplay, and, like, I really enjoy it. It's got, you know, the writing's kind of silly in that, not in a bad way, but, you know, in the way that that good Final Fantasy games were. It's just, it truly feels like, you know, since Final Fantasy with Lightning Returns, 15, really has been moving more in this kind of action RPG way, I can't help but wonder if that's where the mainline Final Fantasy franchise is going to go, with Bravely Default being the new classic, giving the retro Final Fantasy fans what they're looking for. Kind of the way that, like, Green Day is a super sellout band now, but they still do these, like, super obscure side projects to, like, make the type of music that they want to make that's not necessarily marketable. except for the fact that Bravely Default is super marketable. And, like, I got the last copy. We talked about that, I think, beforehand, where some of our friends, you know, who were choosing to go retail had trouble or were tended to be the person people picking up the last copies at the store. And I, when I got this at my local Target, this, like, super charming, like, big scruffy dude was like, oh, was like, he's like, yeah, it's the last copy. He's like, is that, like, a Final Fantasy? And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. So he kind of knew what it was, and I kind of wanted to do him, but side story. anyways, Bravely Default, so good. I'm still really at the start of it, you know, but I can't wait to sink more time into it. The other thing I've been spending a lot of time with is the Final Fantasy XIV A Realm Reborn PS4 beta, and it's great. I mean, there were a couple of issues about UI elements being hard to read, but, I mean, I have a good enough time with it that I went ahead and picked up the PS3 version, and I've started playing it so that I can do the free upgrade, because I really actually enjoy playing it with a controller, which I didn't think I would. So...
yeah, that game's controller scheme is actually really good.
Yeah, so that's what I've been playing.
Excellent. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
And now I think it's time for our social links. This is not where we level up to have powerful personas, but rather it's our opportunity to interact with you. As a side note, we want to let you know that you're always welcome to tweet at GameBuie.org, GameBuie. GameBuieDotorg on Twitter.
At GameBuie.org. .org is spelled at DOTORG.
Or mail us at MailBuie@GameBuie.org.
MailBuie@GameBuie.org.
For any older answers, we will still read you. We're not going to read you. That's a different show. We'll read your responses on air for you backlog blokes and babes out there in Radioland.
Backlog blokes and babes. You tried it. All right.
So this week, our question of the week was, this week we're taking a look at movies based on video games. What's your favorite? Or maybe we should ask, have you ever seen a good one? Our Facebook bonus question was, with several much-loved franchises slated to make the jump to the silver screen in the next few years, is there any particular one you're looking forward to seeing? Over on Twitter, we got a tweet from, a series of tweets from Fixture Face, a.k.a. Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast. His first tweet said, Mortal Kombat! And he said, now, it's Christopher Lambert, right? Not Lambert.
That is, you know, the thing is, they used to just call him Lambert, like, in his earlier films and, like, Highlander and stuff. But then as he became, like, a personality, they started calling him Lambert. So I don't know.
Christopher Lambert as Raiden is genius inept casting, and the soundtrack had me bumping for days. Dan Diaz.
I'm just laughing at the idea of Jeremy bumping for days at Mortal Kombat.
Dan Diaz, Game Boy super fan, said, Mortal Kombat, cue techno music. So Mortal Kombat was a really popular one. Atari Barbie on Twitter, who is Ian from the Koopa Club podcast, said, I have a soft spot for the first Resident Evil and the first Silent Hill movie, both very problematic, but such is life. I'd be curious to hear a little more about that if you wish to elaborate in a Mail Buoy message. Pig Latin Haiku on Twitter, who is Chonko from Koopa Club, said, I second the first Resident Evil as well as the first Mortal Kombat.
I have to make an addendum. We forgot to talk about Silent Hill.
Oh shit, we did.
Fuck, that's probably the very best video. That is, like, that and Dead or Alive are, like, the two very best video game movies.
I can't believe that we had that oversight.
Fuck, yeah, no, that is, you know, Atari Barbie, Ian, you're absolutely correct. There are some problems with the way they adapted Silent Hill, but overall, it is a superb,
you know,
extremely atmospheric, spooktacular horror film.
Maybe
it's
we can...
very good.
Maybe we can sometime this year schedule a... Game Boy Micro, where we analyze Silent Hill adaptation, like, look a little more closely at the game
so
to
I
movie
think
adaptation.
I think instead of that, and let me build on what you're saying, I think what we should do is do a Silent Hill episode and include a discussion on the movie.
Okay, because we only really touched on Silent Hill.
Well, this is Game Boy behind the scenes. Let's get back to the social
All
links.
Right. Chitao 16 says, I love the Super Mario Brothers movie, the first Mortal Kombat movie, the Resident Evil series, DOA Dead or Alive. And then he says, as cheesy as it was, Street Fighter. People say they're bad, but I enjoy them. Maybe I'm more open to new interpretations. The bad video game movie I saw was Alone in the Dark. I mean, come on. It had Tara Reid. Atari Barbie, a.k.a. even said, I love her. Don't throw shade. I have drag queen friends inspired by her, LOL.
Ah, well, I mean, that would be about the only thing she's good for.
She Tao 16 said, okay, that was mean of me to say. I forgot I loved her in Josie and the Pussycats. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes!
Yes, Tara Reid. Over on Facebook, Austin S. said, me and another fan of the Silent Hill series went and saw Silent Hill Revelation. And despite some of the reviews I'd heard from some, me and him both loved it. I think the film did a great job portraying the story of Silent Hill 3, one of my favorite games in the franchise, and I honestly don't understand why people gave it so much shit. Also, you can't beat Pokemon the first movie or Pokemon the movie 2000. Both of those were amazing films, and they had great soundtracks. I think the soundtracks are a little cheesy in the turn-of-the-century way, but you do you, Austin. Plus, Mewtwo is my favorite Pokemon, so the first is uber special in my heart. Aww. And, you know, like we said, because we didn't focus too much on the anime adaptations, and because we just did a Pokemon episode, we didn't. But I remember, you know, we talked on Pokemon episode about we went as teenagers to go see it. So, yeah, it was good for its time. And it's super deep about the origins of Mewtwo.
All I can remember when I think of Pokemon the first movie...
Pokemon the first movie.
Is when, like, the Pokemon are fighting their clone selves, and one of the human characters is like, Pokemon fighting other Pokemon, it's just not right. It's like, bitch, that's what this entire franchise is.
Oh my god.
Like, someone might even, they might even say, I haven't seen it in a few years, but someone might even utter the words, it's a fight no one can win.
Oh my goodness. But, I mean, it's Pokemon the first movie. It's a classic. John, better known as Wicked from Nerdgasm Network and the Game Over Takeover podcast.
Go to.
Says, honestly, I don't find as many movies based on games as bad as other people perceive. I'm able to separate myself from the lore in the game and just get into it for what it is, mindless fun. A lot of movies still tend to tie in the movies with the lore, Mortal Kombat, while a lot of them just seem to discard any notions of what made the games great, Doom. A lot of them are so bad it's good, some are pure bad, but frankly, I like a lot of gaming movies. Resident Evil is still one of my favorite movie franchises, despite waffling between canon and non-canon since the second one. Mortal Kombat was also an amazing adaptation, even though the second one went way too far by jumping two games to get to Ultimate 3. I had not seen Prince of Persia after all this time, but I'm excited on seeing the Peace of Eden, Assassin's Creed movie, and Sly Cooper. P.S. Animation movies based on games have usually done much better. See Street Fighter and Fatal Fury. Exactly what you had been saying, Captain Spike. Renee from the...
To be fair, I watched a lot of these anime movies for the first time with Wicked when we were in, like, junior high.
Right.
So,
Renee from the Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast, where they talk about movies. This is kind of up his alley a little bit. Says, it gets flack, but I think a good movie based on a video game is Silent Hill. I welcome the change of the active protagonist from Harry in the video game to Shannon in the movie. And the casting of the movie was terrific. I'm going to butcher these names. Especially Radha Mitchell, Lori Holden, Deborah Unger, and Alex Krieg. The second movie pissed me off because Pyramid Head is not a fucking protector. I know that it's not in the future, but I would really like to see a movie based on Castlevania. I'm kind of surprised we haven't.
Well, you know, that was actually a thing that was going to happen. I want to say that Paul Anderson had actually announced that a few years back, but for whatever reason, it stalled.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. Well, with that, I think it's time to wrap it up. We love your feedback.
We do.
We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. We like to tumble with us on Tumblr. You can plus one us on Google+. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
All of these social links are found at our home base, gamebuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
With that, let's get into some shout-outs, Captain Spike.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes to our friends over at the Koopa Club podcast. They're very similar to what we do here, I'd like to believe. They're sort of our sisters from other misters.
Part of our Hunty Bunch.
Part of the Hunty Bunch. You can check them out over at KoopaClub.com. That is Koopa with a Q, Club with a K. I also want to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. VG Realness is a relatively new on the block LGBT gaming podcast that frankly outclasses all of the rest of us.
Indeed.
Bitches. I also want to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics, as well as Neshoba talks with you about games, which is sort of like NPR about games off-Broadway. Tons of singing, alternative views, it's all good shit. I also want to shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally steal ever so many of my cues. We also have the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore, as well as the Retrograde podcast. They take a look at one classic game per episode and really dive as deep as they can into the how's, what's, and why's. What? Yeah, I'm going to do it right now, fool. And as Slagkick just reminded me, we also have presently another podcast that he and I both appear on, alongside Delvin from VG Realness and Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio. I'm talking, of course, about Reading is Fundamental, the weekly podcast recapping and dishing dirt on each week's episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race. Basically, that's the show to go to if you like hearing me be a bitch to Slagkick. Slagkick, how about you go?
I'm pointing at you because you transitioned this.
I want to take you to a game bar.
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary.
At some point in our episode, we turned my Xbox on because of Kinect.
Oh, probably when I said, like, Xbox, play video. That's super funny. It's spying on us. Good thing we're not naked.
Ew!
That's the type of statement, something you would hear on the Nerdgasm Network. The wildest shock jock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks.
The Xbox really was trying to turn on videos.
Open the Netflix app. That's amazing. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com, you can tune into lots of great content, including Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. We'd like to shout out to Video Game Outsiders, a podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective, the Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, it's pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective, and one that I've been meaning to shout out to for a long time now, and I feel terrible for not mentioning them sooner, is the La Palanca Podcast. That's from Ricardo and Mario, who were two attendees of our podcast Crosszone panel last year at GamerX, and they noticed a lack of, you know, podcasts available for gay Latin American Spanish-speaking podcast listeners. So I believe they are the first gay gaming podcast available in Spanish, which is excellent. They are the podcast Por y Para Gay Gamers Latino Americos en Español. And I am terrible at speaking Spanish, so I'm sorry I butchered that.
Also, we have a very special shout-out to a non-video game show. This doesn't happen very often. But I want to shout-out to Grandpa from Horror House. He recently started a Star Trek podcast called the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast. If you're into Star Trek, you definitely need to check it out. They have some really great conversations. And if I'm being honest, Grandpa actually is a really legitimate host, no offense, but based on sort of how over the top and off topic he gets on some of his other shows, I wasn't sure how good it was going to be, and I was really impressed. So you guys are great, I love what you do, and A plus to you.
Yeah, that's also, they just recently got added to the Voice of Geeks Network as well, so.
That was announced today, in fact. at the time of recording, right now, I believe they're debuting their first episode there tonight.
Excellent. As ever and always, we want to honor and respect Zelda Reorchestrated, the late great project that resulted in many things, including our wonderful theme music. And with that, thank you. It's been good. It's good to be back. We haven't seen you for a while, but expect more content from us very soon.
We have a retrospective on everybody's favorite studio, previously owned, more or less owned by Nintendo, that's now more or less owned by Microsoft, coming up. Please look forward to it. And in the meantime, I guess, you know, keep gaming, keep thinking. Thank you for your time, and see you, Space Cowboy. It's going to get hot and hot as balls in here pretty quick, so okay. Let's try to burn through this episode as fast as we can. Which, I mean, we're game bully, so still, LOL, 2 hours.
You want a piece of me? Oh, what's going on?
Playing.
Oh my God, what you playing?
Do what you want with my body.